This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to a special here on the Place to Be Nation pop feed. We're going to go through and look back at the year 2019 and those we've lost in terms of celebrities, athletes, actors, actresses, pop culture icons. And we're just going to say some words, give some memories, and kind of talk about their impact they had on us. So tonight, our panel is an all-star panel. Actually, we got the band back together. That's right, last year's In Memoriam crew is back. First off, he is the co-host on the Place to Be podcast, co-host of The Main Event over on the Wrestling Feed, my co-host on Year in Pop and various other shows, Mr. Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you tonight?
I am well, Mr. Atherton, and good evening, morning, afternoon, everyone. And, you know, I always think to myself, this has got to be one of the saddest podcasts anyone ever does in the history of any of these feeds. But I guess, we're paying tribute. And it was a crazy year in terms of deaths, because there was a ton of natural causes. Like, we have very few, like, early tragedies. I mean, we do have a few we'll get into, but I feel like most of the deaths were, I don't want to say inevitable, that's not a good word, were natural or, I don't want to say acceptable. What's the word? I'm trying to think of something that's not like, I'm glad they're dead. No. Hey, they lived their 80s or 90s, so they lived a good full life and they're in a better place kind of thing. And I think we have a lot of those in 2019. I think we had a few tragedies, one in sports and a couple others. And of course, those that passed away like in their 50s that probably, you know, should have lived a lot longer. So, as I was going through the list today, Andy, there are a ton of names that I like totally forgot died, and someone that we forgot to add, and I added it later on. But yeah, it's an all-star panel of tributes tonight.
Yeah. It's all about memorializing them. You got to think of it in a positive light. And speaking of positive, he is one of the co-hosts on The Main Event. And one day, maybe we'll have a Tell Me Something Good come back again. He is the conscience of Place of the Nation, Mr. Steve Willie. Steve, how are you tonight?
I am doing good. Thank you for saying that I'm positive as I come on a podcast that reminds us of the never-ending passage of time and our inevitable deaths.
Okay, well, we got that going for us, which is nice. And then rounding out our quartet, he is one of the co-hosts of Talkin' Pop. He is also one of the Sarcastic Four on the Marvel Age podcast and one third of Talkin' WCW on the Wrestling Feed, Mr. Tim Cable. Tim, how are you tonight?
I suppose I'm arguably doing better than the many subjects of our podcast here tonight. So, welcome once again, folks, to Sucky Death Depression Cast. Once again, here we are to talk about the recently departed, dearly and otherwise.
Guest of honors that didn't show up.
That's another way of putting it.
You have a pulse, you're doing better than them. All right, well, thank you, gentlemen, for getting together. So we're going to try something a little different from last year. Last year, we kind of picked out a few names and kind of like went on in depth. We're going to group everybody together by like their genre, so to speak, and kind of go through and then everybody's going to say some words on the ones that they have particular feelings on and go like a little roundtable style. So we're going to start off in the world of sports. One of the first people that we lost was one of the backbones of the coaching staff of the great Yankee dynasty on those championship runs back in the late 90s to early 2000s, Mel Stottlemyre, the great pitching coach, also former major league pitcher, 77 years old. Scott, talk about Mel Stottlemyre for a minute.
Well, he not only was the pitching coach of the Yankee teams, but he was also the pitching coach for the 1986 World Champion New York Mets. So he actually has rings with both New York teams doing the same job. So that's actually kind of cool. Mel Stottlemyre was a great pitcher. Sadly, his pitching the good hunk of his career with the Yankees came at a time in the 60s when they sucked and CBS owned them and they were terrible. But one of the smartest guys in the history of baseball in terms of getting pitchers out of ruts. And I mean, the wealth of talent he had with the Mets in 86, Doc Gooden, Bob Ojeda, Ron Darling, Sid Fernandez. And he was able to get a bullpen that had two guys with double digit wins and over 20 saves. It was amazing how he was able to put that staff together to win 108 games in a world championship. Fast forward, 10, 11 years. And, he had to move some chess pieces when he was at the Yankees early on. That pitching staff in 96 was a little hodgepodge. I mean, Andy Pettit had a good year, but, Jimmy Key was at the back end of his career and, Kenny Rogers sucked. And, who's the other starter on that team? Pettit started. Who started game two?
Oh, shit.
I'm trying to think of the other guy in that staff. Because all those other guys like David Wells and Coney.
Coney.
I mean, Coney's Coney, so that's pretty solid. But he was just amazing dealing with pitching, particularly bullpens and helping out with bullpens because the Yankees, particularly the Yankees during their dynasty, the bullpens during the regular season in 96 was putrid. And they came out like all these lefties like David Weathers. Well, not Weathers was a left, was a righty, but guys like Graham Lloyd, who came off, as a leftover in a trade that involved Pat Listash. Meanwhile, Fred McGriff and Ryan Klesko and those guys in the 96 World Series couldn't get a hit. And they either struck out, popped up, or grounded into double plays. So Mel Stottlemyre should be credited with settling down guys, relaxing them, finding holes in their rotation, in their movements, in their delivery, and make great pitchers. Particularly guys, again, I want to go back to the 86 Mets because a guy like Ron Darling, who in 1985 had 115 walks, which is kind of crazy, but settled him down and he won 15 games in 1986. So great pitcher, great pitching coach, sorely missed here in the New York area for both Yankee and Met fans.
Yeah, he was a part of that kind of like the three-headed monster, between Torrey, Zimmer, and Mel. They kind of kept that team in line, and was always communicating. And just, he was one of the backbones of the dynasty of the for us Yankee fans, at least. All right, so we also lost back in February one of probably the greatest outfielders ever lived, the only man to win the MVP award in both leagues. That was the great Frank Robinson. Steve, you have some words to say about the great Frank Robinson?
Yeah, well, he was mostly known for his playing days with the Reds and the Orioles. And I think people of our age, more for the Orioles years, hit 586 homers, and that is before the steroid era. So that is pretty impressive. One of the few first ballot Hall of Famers. We're taping this on the day of another first ballot Hall of Famer getting inducted in. And he had over 89% of the vote. Became the first black manager. So he was a player manager, yes, which was a thing in the 70s. Did that with the Cleveland Indians. And I also, for all the people that I kind of looked like, I tried to find a little bit of a fun fact. It's up to you whether you actually consider these things fun or not. But
Frank Robinson, the judge of that.
Yes. He was a final manager for the Montreal Expos.
Yes, he was.
First of the Washington Nationals, but there's still a lot of love for the Expos and a little bit of hope that they can come back.
I agree. Greatest uniforms ever.
Oh, yeah. Dawson, Ray, love him. Wallach.
The kid.
Mm-hmm. No, I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. He's hanging in my closet. Twice.
It's unfortunate.
I know.
He's hanging in your closet.
I have a lot of guys. I have a lot of... the running joke on Main Event, Tim, is that whenever we talk on Main Event, we talk about like the numbers correlating to our episode number. If it's a player whose jersey's hanging in my closet.
Oh, I'm aware of... Yeah,
And I say, he's hanging in my closet.
The trend.
Yeah.
But, so, given the topic of this episode, I just...
Uh-oh.
I don't think you want to be misconstrued by making comments like that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have Andre Dawson hanging in my closet and Gary Carter buried in my basement.
There's a difference, though, Steve. Andre Dawson's still alive, so there's a problem there.
As far as you know. And here we are.
Yep.
It all comes back. Also in baseball, we lost one of the great Negro League pitchers, Don Newcomb. He died at the age of 92 back in February as well. Scott, you have some words to talk about Don Newcomb.
Yeah, Don Newcomb, even more so than his Negro League days. I'm trying to see, did he actually pitch in the Negro League? Take a look here. Let me see. He pitched for 2 years with the Newark Eagles for a couple of years. And, of course, Newark ended up having an independent league team called the Bears. Managed by, ironically, Mr. Willie, Tim Raines, another former Expo. But, of course, Don Newcomb, more well-known for pitching in Brooklyn and in L.A. For the Dodgers in the 50s and early 60s. Don Newcomb, I believe, pitched the Game 7. No, he did not pitch Game 7. Somebody else did. It was Game 6. But he was part of that 1955 Brooklyn Dodgers team that finally beat the Yankees in the World Series after one failure after another to face them. And again, one of the first great black pitchers and an icon in Brooklyn, that's for sure. I think there's a Don Newcomb Avenue somewhere in Flatbush, along with a ton of other ex-Dodgers. But yeah, rest in peace, Don Newcomb, a trailblazer in the 40s and 50s and early 60s in the big borough in baseball.
All right. Then we lost in April, one of the great Boston Celtics, John Havlicek, at the age of 79. Steve, now you wanted to talk about John Havlicek, right?
Yeah, spent his entire 16-year career with the Boston Celtics. And if you want to teach your kids some fun things about basketball, you got to get some of the old-time basketball video games, or even some of the new ones that throwback, because my child knows that John Havlicek had a pretty sweet white man fro. that's not my fun fact, but it's a pretty good one, though, I think about it. So 8-time NBA champion, which is, you know, with that, you know, part of the greatest dynasty in all sports, probably. I mean, at least I would argue the greatest dynasty in all of sports, those that run of the Red Auerbach Celtics. So 8 times, first 4 years in the league, he was a champion. NBA Finals MVP in 74, 13-time NBA All-Star, inducted in the Hall of Fame in 1984. And even with the high-scoring league of today, he is still 16th all-time in points scored. Started, was one of the first six men, people who brought that as more of a, you know, more as a position on a team, the first one off the bench. And do you know his nickname, Scott? This is my fun fact.
John Havlicek's, well, I do know his nickname. His nickname was Hondo.
Yeah, as an homage to a John Wayne movie in 1953.
Yes, which is a great movie, by the way.
Yeah.
Of course, Havlicek known for one of the greatest moments ever. I want to say it was the 66 East Finals when they were playing the Sixers, and he stole an inbound pass, and Johnny Most kept yelling, "Havlicek stole the ball! He stole the ball!" just a great overall player. Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%, Steve.
All right. So, and then in May, we lost the winning quarterback of the first two Super Bowls, the great Bart Starr, at the age of 85. Scott, talk about Bart Starr for a moment.
I don't know. Steve, why don't you talk about Bart Starr?
Bart Starr was a nice man. he was very charitable.
You do realize, Steve, they didn't have cheeseheads back then.
Yeah,
they were just everyday regular guys, right?
Yeah, he had a nice charity that I donated my old cars to help. It's called Rawhide. He helped teenage boys that were in trouble with Johnny Law. So donated a couple cars to that, and then I realized he was in charge of it. But yeah, he was a nice person who was very charitable.
Run that by me again. I'm sorry. So what kind of trouble are they in? Were they
they were more like kids who are getting kicked out of school, but
okay,
not bad kids. And so they would, you know, you could donate your car there, your old car, and they'd fix them up and sell them and learn job skills, stuff like that.
Gotcha. So we're giving old cars to kids in juvie? How is this
working? Yeah. I mean,
so they can escape. Double take there.
Yes, exactly. I did a pretty good job of explaining that clearly.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, continue. I'm having fun with your facts.
Bart Starr, of course, a tremendous quarterback for the Green Bay Packers in their dynasty of the 60s. He won. He was the starting quarterback for the first two Super Bowls and was also the first quarterback to not only win MVP, he was the first player to win MVP because he was the MVP of Super Bowl I, but he was also the MVP of Super Bowl II. He coached the Packers in the mid to late 70s into the 80s. And yeah, generally a nice guy. Not in that pompous ass category like Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers, but probably the nicest, maybe next to Don Majkowski, the nicest Packers quarterback of all time. Right, Steve?
I don't think that Bart Starr sent out penis pics to female reporters.
Or popped pain pills.
Yeah. Or dumped Olivia Munn. Bad choice.
God, that's so funny. Anyway, Bart Starr, one of the rocks of the foundations of Vince Lombardi's dynasty in the 60s. So, sadly missed.
All right. And then, actually, the next day, we lost a Major League Baseball player, a great player, actually, who is more remembered for one of the biggest errors in the history of baseball. At the age of 69, we lost Bill Buckner. You know, played for the Cubs and the Dodgers and the Red Sox, was a great first baseman. But I remember growing up watching Scott, you can probably talk about it a little bit better since you're a Mets fan, because it was in benefit of your team, which helped lead to the 86 World Series title, of, you know, Mookie Wilson hitting that ball down the line. And, you know, Bill does the one thing that, you know, your little league coaches tell you to do. You get that glove down, and you make sure dirt comes up with it when there's a ground ball, and goes right through his legs. Ray Knight comes around. They win the game, and then they go on to win the series. So talk about Bill Buckner, Scott.
Well, before I get to that night, Bill Buckner was a damn good player. Mm-hmm. He played for six teams, actually went back to the Red Sox in 1990 for his last year, won the batting title in 1980. He was only an All-Star once. That's kind of criminal. 289 lifetime hitter, close to 3,000 hits, 27-15. But what happened to the Red Sox on the Red Sox was, of course, normally in 1986, John McNamara would take out Bill Buckner and put in Dave Stapleton for defensive purposes. But with the Red Sox having a 5-3 lead in the bottom of the 10th inning of Game 6, and I was on the floor of my mom's bedroom ready to slit my wrists, John McNamara decided to keep Bill Buckner in the game so he could celebrate on the field with his teammates, because Bill Buckner had not won a championship in his career. Well, after Calvin Schiraldi got the first two outs, Gary Carter, Kevin Mitchell, who didn't have his cup on because he was already out of his clothes booking his flight to San Diego because he thought the game was over, And Ray Knight got back-to-back-to-back hits, cut the lead to 5-4. And then with Mookie Wilson at the plate, Bob Stanley threw a wild pitch, tying the game. So plenty of blame to go around the Red Sox other than Bill Buckner. And then Mookie Wilson hit a dribbler up the first base line. Bill Buckner tried to get it. It went between his legs, through to wickets. Ray Knight scored. The Mets won the game 6-5. And the series was tied at 3. What is not mentioned, and this is why I defend Bill Buckner vociferously, number one, he was not going to beat Mookie to the bag. So Mookie would have been safe. The only difference would have been Ray Knight would not have scored. He would have been at third, and then Howard Johnson, I think, was on deck, and who knows what would have happened after that. And then, you know, two nights later, they played game seven, and the Red Sox had a 3-0 lead in that game. And then the bullpen blew it, and the Mets won 8-5. We forget about – but Red Sox fans forget about game seven and the fact they had a 3-run lead in that game. They only care about the fact that poor Bill Buckner, you know, let the ball go through his legs, and not the fact that the bullpen, that Calvin Schiraldi's nut shrank, and he gave up 2 runs to tie the game. So I've defended Bill Buckner for years and years and years, and I met Bill Buckner at a card show. And I wore a Met jersey, and I said, listen, I feel bad for what's happened to you. Because Red Sox fans, the heartless pricks that they are, kind of like vilified him and sent him off to Idaho or something or whatever. And only when they won it in 2004, then they decide to invite Bill Buckner back, which I thought was just so tasteless. But in any event, Bill Buckner deserves more credit for being a great ball player and a pretty good hitter, 289 lifetime hitter, than what happened that night at Shea. It's sad. It's sad that that's what will be remembered by him. It's unfortunate, but a great player. And John McNamara was trying to do a nice thing, and that's what happened. So,
yeah,
sad.
Mm-hmm. And then in July, we lost a couple of baseball players. We lost actually a current player. He was pitching for the Angels, but unfortunately, at the age of 27, Tyler Skaggs was found unresponsive in his hotel room, and turned out that, you know, it was a mix of alcohol and painkillers or whatever, and he ended up, you know, choking to death, basically. So a very tragic death, life cut short early. Then there was Jim Boughton, the great pitcher from the 80s, I believe. He pitched...
he pitched in the 60s and 70s.
66, 70, sorry, my Wikipedia is a little slow. But yeah, he pitched for the Yankees, Pilots, Astros, and Braves. And then also we lost a great NFL player, one of the members of the 72 Dolphins, and went on to be a an analyst. I remember growing up watching him on Inside the NFL.
Correct.
Nick Buonocani at the age of 78. Yeah, growing up, him and Len Dawson yep. every week on Inside the NFL.
Loved it. Mm-hmm. Loved it. One quick thing, Andy, about Jim Boughton. Don't forget, he also wrote the controversial book Ball 4, which was about his 1969 season with the Pilots, and a lot of people were not happy with him. He kind of, to use a wrestling term, he kind of baseball versioned of breaking kayfabe and talked about things going on. It was kind of like when what's-his-name wrote North Dallas 40 and talked about the Cowboys in the late 70s, but he kind of broke.
Wasn't that the one with all the sex, drugs, the drinking, yep, and all that stuff too?
Yep. Yeah, broke the fourth wall in baseball, and a lot of guys were not, and infidelities as well. So people were not happy with him, but in any event, it's still a memorable book.
Yes. All right. And then, in the world of boxing, fairly young though, we lost Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker, at the age of 55, described as pound for pound, one of the greatest fighters for his time. Scott, you want to talk about, Sweet Pea?
Sweet Pea was – Pernell Whitaker was a tremendous fighter. 44-1 with a no contest. He had some – one of the greatest – he's – and he was one of the greatest defensive fighters of all time. He was a guy that was very hard to hit. And what's sad is 3 of his 4 losses came in the tail end of his career. In fact, his last win was in January of 97. Then he lost to Oscar De La Hoya. No contest to – Andre Pistraev in Ledyard, actually, Foxwoods. Then back-to-back losses to Felix Trinidad, another great fighter, and Carlos Borcores. And then he retired with a record of 44-1. One of the best fights I ever watched was in September of 93 when he fought Julio Cesar Chavez to that no contest, to that draw. What a tremendous fight. I mean, Julio Cesar Chavez is one of the greatest of all time. Just a great fighter and, utter heartbreak, when he passed away. And he was and to mention a minute ago, he was one of those defensive fighters, not like pussy boy Floyd Mayweather, who just dances around and doesn't let you hit him. And then, you know, doesn't throw any punches. He just kind of runs around in a circle. He actually goes in and defends himself. And that was what made him one of the toughest middleweights to punch. And it wasn't because he ran away. It was because he just was very good at ducking you and blocking you and getting shots in on the rebound. So that's a sad one because he's one of the best fighters of the late 90s when the middleweights were kind of going back and forth, you know. You know, when there was a kind of a hole in the mid 90s after Sugar Ray Leonard retired and Marvin Hagler, etc. Sweet Pea kind of joined with, like, you know, Camacho and Oscar and tremendous fighter. Sad at such a young age.
Yeah. Also, we lost at a much younger age, former NFL player Cedric Benson, the running back. He was at the age of 36, unfortunately passed away in a motorcycle accident. Lived a kind of a troubled life for a while, you know, with arrests and amongst other things. So that's going to wrap up the sports section. So we're going to move on to our pop culture section, and we're going to start off with Ron Miller. Now, you may not know that name off the top of your head, but he was Walt Disney's son-in-law, married to Diane Disney Miller, the Walt's daughter. He was the former president and CEO of Disney back in the probably the late 70s, I would say, going into the 80s. Now, Walt's nepotism led him to this ultimately. Not, you know, Walt had passed away several years before he came into power. But that was kind of a time for Disney when, you know, they were ripe for takeover. They were looking at other companies were looking. And when he was ousted, they brought in Michael Eisner, Frank Wells, and Jeffrey Katzenberg. And that's kind of where led Disney to their, you know, their rise to the power that they are now. So a little infamous, but I just thought we should mention it. And then also in February, we lost Karl Lagerfeld, the designer. And then in March of last year, we lost Sid Sheinberg. Now, again, you may not know the name off the top of your head. He was an executive for Universal Pictures. And he was there, I think, for 40 years, I believe he was in charge of Universal. And we can basically credit him with Spielberg, getting all the great Spielberg movies. I mean, Steven Spielberg is the talent and all that, but he was the one that, you know, went ahead with making Jaws. Spielberg wanted to do other movies. Actually, here's a fun fact. Spielberg wanted to do, Schindler's List before he did Jurassic Park, but Sheinberg said, I'll approve this Holocaust movie of yours, but you got to do, you know, Jurassic Park first, which went on to become, at the time, the biggest box office smash. So that's where kind of, you know, Sid, kind of anybody.
And wasn't Universal, like, trying to purchase Disney during that kind of late 70s, 80s down period for them? Mm-hmm. So we lost these two studio heads same year. Sheinberg, a name I was more familiar with than Ron Miller, but looking over the period of Disney that Ron Miller presided over, it's like all those mid-70s movies that I maybe saw when I was a kid and don't remember that well, mm-hmm. and my parents kind of talk about sometimes.
Or D'Amato talks about all the time.
Or D'Amato, there you go.
He's a mule that kicks field goals.
So yeah, you've got that, and you can watch all those now on Disney Plus. So yeah, it's crazy to think that Disney was going to be potentially acquired by another studio, right? Mm-hmm. from our thinking today, that's just sort of inconceivable. But yeah, there was a time. Tron, I see, also came out during his stewardship. So very cool. Sheinberg, by the way, for Universal. I have a fun fact. Married to Mrs. Brody. So I guess she was Mrs. Sheinberg. But yeah, Lorraine.
Bruiser?
No.
No. Bruce Brody's a better actor.
Lorraine Gary, yes. I think is her name.
That is correct.
Lorraine Gary. Yep.
Yes, I'm looking over. I have a fun fact here.
She was in a movie with Michael Caine. We know.
No, I wasn't going to say that.
Are we going to do this again?
And I'm not going to. I'm not doing a Michael Caine impression.
Do a shot. We're talking about Jaws the Revenge.
It all comes back to Jaws the Revenge.
Yes, it does.
No, I'm reading this fact about him, and he, you know, also another film that was released under his tenure was Back to the Future, and apparently he famously, I didn't know this, wanted to change the name of Back to the Future to Spaceman from Pluto, despite the film having nothing to do with outer space, spaceman, or the dwarf planet of Pluto.
I saw that, and do we want to believe that story? Like, doesn't that sound like one of those types of things that is just sort of a, I don't want to say an urban legend, but maybe he said it, but wasn't serious, or it just got misconstrued somehow. I don't know. And I'd heard that before, and it just always sounds like one of those, how can someone really be that dense, I guess. But okay,
all right. Also, we lost earlier this year Charles Van Doren at the age of 93. Now, he was played by, I believe it was Ralph Fiennes, I believe, who played him in Quiz Show. He was the famous contestant who basically cheated or was given all the answers to win because he was what they wanted the champion on this game show to be. Basically a you know, Roman, a Catholic, Caucasian male, not anybody of any other kind of race or gender or creed. And then we had Jim Fowler, the I believe the zoologist. And then I.M. Pei, the architect, at the age of 102. Steve, talk about I.M. Pei.
Well, my fun fact for this is not that most elementary school kids would call him I.M.P., because that would be terrible. But he is a Chinese
American. It is pretty fun, though.
Oh, yeah, I know. Thank you for not letting that die. I appreciate it. I.M. Pei, a very influential, famous Chinese-American architect. He was born and raised in Shanghai and Hong Kong, but moved to the United States and became more known as an American architect. He's commissioned for buildings all around the globe for years and decades. The first well-known building that we would know would be the JFK Library in Massachusetts. Also did, having an old child who used to be obsessed with skyscrapers, did the Big Bank of China skyscraper in Hong Kong, and also did the renovation of the Louvre, which I did not know about. He tended towards the modernist and cubist style, which means absolutely nothing to me. But I'm sure that it would mean something to some of the more artistic types who are listening. My fun fact, though, one of his last buildings was in Cleveland, Ohio, and it was the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Really?
So it was a huge, you know, kind of disconnect to the other works of his career, which were like, you know, really high art places like the Louvre. Not that rock and roll is not high art, but some people put him down because they thought that rock and roll was like a lower form of culture. And some people also in Ohio and some architects did not like the building because the city of Cleveland kind of left him out to dry and didn't really fund it that well. So a lot of his design elements weren't able to be seen. But I still think, have any of you guys been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No, it's kind of on my to-do list, though.
Yeah, me too.
Make it over to that area.
Yeah, I just there's probably only two things worth it in Cleveland, and I think it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and our friend from PTBN, Mike Eller. That's maybe Francisco Lindor from the Indians. That's about it. I've been there twice. I almost went to college there until I made it to Cleveland, and then I said, Dad, let's go home. But yeah, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I went to Cleveland for a wedding, about a decade ago, and it's really, really cool. So if you're ever around that area, it's definitely worth a drive into.
Wow. All right.
So, on a side note, two things.
Number one, I want to go back one guy because I just looked this up. Do you know where Jim Fowler, who of course was the co-host of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, you know where he died? Right here in the city I'm sitting in, Norwalk, Connecticut. How about that, huh? At the age of 89. But yes, he was the, just to be a little more specific on the zoology, he was actually the co-host of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom until the iconic Marlon Perkins passed away in 1986. And speaking of the architect for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it was originally going to go in when the board was choosing what city to put it in. It was originally going to go into San Francisco, but one artist who was on the board overruled them and got them to swing the vote and put it to Cleveland. Do you know who that artist was?
Hmm.
Let's put it this way, Mr. Atherton. He's an artist we talk about often on Urine Pop. Dr. G, be very proud of me right now.
Really?
The great Billy fucking Joel, goddammit.
Oh, wow. Why Cleveland?
I was thinking that. I'm like, why would Billy
because
why Alan Cleveland?
Freed. Because Alan Freed, the first great disc jockey.
Oh, okay.
Cleveland.
I always, like, you know, I'm making fun of Cleveland like, a bit, but I think it is cool that such a huge tourist attraction is in a lesser known city.
Yes, and because Billy said no one will visit it in San Francisco because it'll be too fucking expensive.
It'll be too expensive and there's too many other things. So it just can get lost in the shuffle. But like Cleveland, it is I would think the number one tourist attraction there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you think about Hall of Fames though, they're all in lesser known cities for the most part. I mean, you know, baseball is in Cooperstown, which is a pain in the butt to get to. You know, basketball is in Springfield. Football's in Canton, Ohio. Which I don't know anything about Canton, Ohio, except for the football hall of fame there. Where's the hockey one? Montreal?
Or Toronto?
Toronto. As like, you know, flip a coin. Montreal, Toronto. So, yeah, that's kind of a trend. I mean, you know, and we wouldn't have gotten that great Drew Carey open. Because, you know, the whole Cleveland rocks, I guess. That's where I came from.
Yeah. I went to the College Football Hall of Fame as a kid. My dad was in the military, so he took us to the Air Force Museum. And it was in Dayton. It was Kings Island, the Military Museum, and the College Football Hall of Fame. And I kid you not, it was in a strip mall. It was like...
I think it's moved now, because I think it's part in of Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah, Indianapolis, that's right.
Where the NCAA, like, Champions Hall is, or wherever that shit is, that's where all that stuff is.
Yeah, it was a mostly abandoned strip mall that just kind of, they've just built off of.
Yeah.
It's something you'd see, like, today, now that, like, malls are becoming empty. You could put something like that into a Macy's or a Yonkers.
Yonkers. Speaking of, I'd like a point of preference, please. For all of you listeners out there that live in the Northeast, please don't be dissuaded by this lazy slug of a host we have. Cooperstown is not a hard drive if you actually know how to drive and aren't a lazy slug. Driving to Cooperstown is really not that hard.
Really? Go to Cooperstown. How far is it from civilization?
Oh, now we're talking about length?
That's all I'm saying. It's like
you weren't saying that. You were saying it's a hard drive. It's not a hard drive. It's straight. It's just long.
I didn't say how it was twisty and turny. It's not an easy drive. That's all. You can't get there in a couple hours. It's in the middle of nowhere.
You stay straight and don't move your steering wheel. It's quite good. People in Cooperstown are, you know, for a Yankee fan who's going to have 85 zillion fucking people there in July, you're really being a douche to the poor Cooperstown tourism people.
Because those are the I'm from New York, and those are the people who say, well, they're from New York. I'm like, no, you're from New York State. Just get it right, okay?
Why don't you just say that the Hockey Hall of Fame's in Moose Jaw then, okay?
Well,
Medicine Hat.
I was going to guess Saskatoon.
By the way, the Golf Hall of Fame is
Kenosha?
In Kenosha?
No, but the Bowling Hall of Fame is right outside Milwaukee.
Hell yeah, it is. I want an Earl Anthony statue. The Golf Hall of Fame is, I think, in Orlando. The Tennis Hall of Fame is in Newport. I've actually played at the Tennis Hall of Fame. I think that's it. Is there any other Hall of Fames? I think those are the only ones that matter. Yeah, I think that's it. Anyway, go to Cooperstown. Don't listen to him.
I'm not saying don't go to Cooperstown.
just don't ask him to drive you there.
I'm
just saying it's not near a major city. That's all I'm saying. That was the point of my comment. Mr. I have to mention Billy Joel on every fucking show.
Well, you know, it adds clicks.
Oh, man, this podcast is dying.
Along with our guests.
Guys are just so size obsessed here, talking about these towns and how museums size and how big they are. And just it's just like a Place to Be podcast.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
At least we stay on brand. All right, so back to the In Memoriam. Gloria Vanderbilt. The socialite, heiress, mother to Anderson Cooper, passed away at the age of 95. Steve, you wanted to say a few words about Gloria Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I like you said part of what I was going to say, because I was reading an obituary about her, and she was referred to as a, quote, American artist, author, actress, fashion designer, heiress, and socialite, and mother of CNN's Anderson Cooper. And as I read that, it helped me realize that I need to aim a little higher in life, and maybe I'm not living up to my potential. Yeah, I mean, I knew her more of as a fashion designer, mm-hmm. and, you know, like more for her blue jeans. She designed all manners of clothing, home goods, fragrances. Anderson Cooper just adored her. And if you ever watch her New Year's Eve specials on CNN, which I highly recommend doing, it's hysterical. They basically would rip on Gloria Vanderbilt the entire time. And my fun fact, which I think is really cool, and the reason I wanted to, I shouldn't say do her, because that sounds pretty scandalous compared to what I'm going to tell you about Gloria Vanderbilt. In the 1930s, she was at the center of a then highly scandalous child custody battle. It was between her mother and her aunt. So, you know, you said she's an heiress. She was an heiress to, I think it might have been an oil or something like that. Her father died at a very young age. So both she and her twin had $5 million trust funds given to them. And at the time, that was $5 million. Today's money was like, I think it was like $75 million or something like that.
You adjust it for inflation, it's actually, I did the math, and it's $600 trillion.
Excellent.
In today's money.
Yes. Well, that's what made it even more scandalous, because
right.
The aunt was saying that the mom was not fit to be a mom because she was a partier. And then it came out that these relatives of the Vanderbilts, like mom too, there was allegations of lesbian affairs with royal family members in the UK. There was another relative who was the mistress of one of the princes at the time. So all this came out in the newspapers of the day. And so it got so contentious, like the judge had to talk one-on-one with Gloria Vanderbilt, who was just a young child at the time.
So is this something that they had covered perhaps on The Crown, which I haven't watched, but I'm getting sort of talked into watching? Affairs with royals, you feel like it's got to come up.
Possibly. I know that. The only thing I know about The Crown was that it was a category on the Jeopardy Greatest of All Time tournament, and I knew not one of them.
That's fair.
Yeah.
It does seem like the type of story that needs that FX prestige miniseries treatment, you know, this trial. And literally, you could call it Trial of the Century, and just it's an eight to ten episodes. I feel like eight's the right number. Yeah, and rack up some Emmys.
Some hot lesbian mistress royal family action.
There you go. Yeah.
Basically writes itself.
Yes. I think there
trying is. Trying to think who I want to play Gloria Vanderbilt, though. I mean, if we're focusing on the trial, though, she'd be a young child and not really much of a presence in that, I guess. You almost sort of have to extend it out into her life, her adult life. But I don't know. I'm fantasy booking biopics now. So it just goes to show she's had an interesting life. I mean,
it's so interesting that she wrote six memoirs.
Right. Well, she ticked a lot of boxes. You'd say this is my life as a socialite. This is my life as a fashion designer. This is my life as what else did we say she did? A mother. This is my life as a perfume mogul, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Household goods, blue jeans, or like Steve said earlier.
Yeah. All kinds of things. Man, Gloria Vanderbilt deep dive, something I never thought I would do. There was a book based on it and a 1982 NBC miniseries. And it was nominated for 6 Emmys and a Golden Globe Award.
Okay, really? Well,
yeah, they've done this already. It's time to be redone.
It is, yeah. You said that was the early 90s. That, you know, that
early 80s, yeah, 1982.
Oh, holy crap.
All right.
Yeah, we're way past that statute of limitations.
Yeah.
All right. Then in later that month, we lost a reality star. Actually, somebody who I never personally met, but she was on one of the shows on the channel I work for. Beth Chapman, the wife of Dwayne the dog Chapman.
Oh, that's who that is. That's right.
Yes. At the age of 51, she unfortunately passed away from cancer. A very, you know, you don't really know what to believe on these shows, and I'm just saying this completely honestly, not with any entire knowledge, but they had a job to do, but she was always seemed as she was tough, but kind of mothering to those that she had to pick up. You know, they always seemed to try to help these people get on the straight and narrow and do it the most peaceful way. You know, these people, you know, owed or had to appear or didn't appear, and you know, these had to make a living and bring them in. So Scott, you want to talk about Beth Chapman?
Well, the only reason I put my initials next to it is because shame on you.
Oh, shame
on you, Mr. Atherton, for not putting her on here originally. Your bosses would be very displeased with you for ignoring the backbone show for like what, fucking 7 years or something on A&E?
Yeah, pre-duck.
Something like that.
And actually, I had to build an in memoriam card pre-duck for her last year when she passed.
You know
away.
What's funny though about that show? You know what's funny? In all seriousness, guys, you know what's funny about that show? It made me realize that and the show about the hookers on HBO. There's like a seedy underbelly to Hawaii. Like, you would have thought Hawaii is the land of milk and honey. Well, there's a lot of milk and a lot of honeys, but according to the HBO show about the fucking Hawaii prostitutes or whatever the hell that documentary was, and now you got Dog picking up a bunch of fucking retreads and reprobates, I'm thinking maybe Hawaii is not as clean as it should be, like the Brady Bunch episode with the tiki and the, you know. The
well, it's like a lot of
– Well, the island is beautiful. The people – Well, the people are often very beautiful also, yeah, but the lives they lead sometimes aren't so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a lot of these islands. I mean, yeah, it's a state and all that, but, you know, you see the beautiful part with the resorts and everything, and then, you know, you see what you don't see is the people who actually live there and have to make a living, and most of them border on the poverty line just because that's the way the economy is set up. It's very... You know, there's not a middle class is a very small percentage. It's either the haves or the have-nots in a lot of these tropical islands. You know, that's like some of these islands you go that you may travel to. They say, oh, it's beautiful. Don't leave the resort, you know, kind of thing. And these shows kind of show us that Hawaii just happens to be like one of those areas, you know.
Was that mostly in the Honolulu area?
No, they hopped around.
I was going to say, I mean, Honolulu is a major
city. It's a big city. Yeah, it's a big city.
Yeah, it's a big city. In Waikiki Beach, which we all think of as very touristy, but it's going to have the same problems that any big city does.
But they weren't on the big island. They were on one of the smaller islands, I believe.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I've been to the big island like, four or five times and gone all over the place. And that's like more some small city.
It gets like some very, farm towns.
It's all... Yeah. But yeah, like I bet the real little islands, I mean, like Molokai is like essentially was formed as a leper colony.
Yeah. So, you know, it just showed them doing their job. It just happened to be in a tropical setting. And then somebody, and then we lost somebody who's actually played on screen this year by John Bernthal in Ford versus Ferrari. We lost the former CEO of Chrysler, Lee Iacocca. Scott, you want to say some words about Lee Iacocca?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a legendary industrialist who went through a lot of crap in his life and his career as a chairman. Chrysler goes through a lot of guff. I owned a Plymouth. It was an unfortunate soul. I own a Ford now, and it's a good car. But he's like one of those guys that you'll remember from the 80s as one of those, you know, one of those guys who was always in the news and tried to kind of make the American car better because it always got a lot of shit for sucking and all the foreign cars are better. He did the best he could. And, you know, he kept a struggling city like Detroit kind of afloat when it was not easy. And so he's one of the most legendary business people and industrialists of the 20th century. So I think he deserves a mention, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I remember him from the commercials a lot when we were kids. You know,
I do too.
He had a presence, you know.
I mean, he developed the Mustang. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I remember hearing the name all the time growing up without really knowing who it was attached to until I was a bit older.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, you know, I didn't know much of his story. So when I saw Ford vs. Ferrari, even though it's not a documentary, but I couldn't believe how big of a character he was in this whole story. Then we lost, at the age of 89, former presidential candidate from the Independent Party. He was a you know, a business magnate, billionaire, philanthropist. H. Ross Perot. Famously parodied by Dana Carvey on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and Whoopi Goldberg had some famous lines when he came up. He's like, you know, Ross Perot's out there. He's like this puppet. Somebody got their hand up his ass, and he's saying all the right shit. You know, because everybody's got all sick of George Sr., H.W., before he was leaving office. Scott, do you want to talk about Ross Perot?
I remember Ross Perot from his wondering if there were aliens and that kind of stuff. But Ross Perot was another legitimate businessman. And yes, Perot did to Daddy Bush what Ralph Nader did to Gore in 2000. He siphoned votes away from him. Because if you take Perot's votes and give them to Bush, he probably would have beat Bill Clinton. And on the other side of the coin, if you take Nader's votes and give them to Gore probably would have won in 2000. So he was one of those, you know, those are probably the two greatest third party candidate examples. But I mean, he was a guy who, you know, he probably didn't understand the political animal, but I think he, you know, understood about business and was not a dumb guy and, you know, gave it a shot, stuck his neck out, and ultimately he affected an election. Mm-hmm. And that'll always be remembered, you know. Maybe not pleasantly in the Bush house, but you know. But
well, turn the debates into a triple threat, didn't he?
He did. Yes, he did.
Which
Ralph Nader didn't get that.
Right, for a third party candidate. That's a pretty big fucking deal.
Absolutely big deal. So Ralph Nader didn't have the power to do that in 2000.
Well, he had didn't he have almost 10% of the vote at one point?
Yeah. He did. Yeah. He was scaring some people. You know, he was larger than life character.
He was I remember his vice presidential pick was also famously lampooned. He was,
James Stockdale.
Yeah, thank you. James Stockdale. Was a kook. It was like he almost had Alzheimer's or something. But Perot, I remember him because he was trying to get equal time on television because mm-hmm. there's always been that equal time law for candidates, but it really didn't apply to him as an independent. So what he did was, God, this is good.
He's,
It was so good. He spent money to get on primetime television. And so this is, you know, early 90s where cable doesn't have as big of an imprint. And he sat at a desk. I clearly remember this. And he would bring out freaking bar graphs and pie charts at 7 o'clock in the evening. So eight Eastern. And for an hour. Basically give. I'm serious. It was dead serious.
I know.
An hour.
I remember it too.
Yeah, give.
My grandparents used to watch it. They were in the bag for all.
I'm pretty sure my dad voted for him. I don't know about my mom, but I remember them watching it. And it's to people who are younger, just it was the 1990s version of a PowerPoint presentation. It's the only thing I could. It was mind blowing.
On primetime TV.
On primetime television, not on C-SPAN, like on CBS, NBC. Did he buy multiple channels?
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did.
Well, and now, it's so funny because people like make fun of Elizabeth Warren today for having an answer for everything and having an explanation or a chart or some kind of – she pulls receipts, right? Mm-hmm. And he would do that on a – just such an unbelievably mind-numbing level, and people will just sit there and watch it. I mean, it was, you wouldn't think that anyone just has the attention span or the patience for this, but I mean, he was winning people over with that approach. And God, apparently he won like 19% of the popular vote. That's better than 10% that we were thinking initially. Didn't get any electoral votes, but still, that's a huge chunk of the electorate.
Yeah. What's funny is he was in June, he was leading a lot of polls, and then he dropped out in July, and that kind of killed him. But he didn't win any states. Clinton won 32 states and Bush won 18 states, but he did get almost 19.8 million votes. Yeah. That's not a small chunk. That's a pretty hefty chunk. Now, I don't know if those votes would have affected Bush in winning states. But obviously you can't give all 19 million to Bush because, I mean, he wouldn't have won 58 million. I mean, he could have, but I mean, let's say 2/3 of those, because obviously Perot was mostly conservative, particularly economically. So let's just say that maybe 12 of the 19 million went to Bush and 7 of it went to Clinton. They would have been about 51 million apiece. Now, I don't know how many states would have been affected if Bush would have got more than 18 states, but this guy was no joke. This guy was no joke. And had he hung around and not – and I remember him bailing in July, and Stockdale was not a great
Which
pick,
there was some question around that as I recall. Like it almost seemed like – I don't know. There was some kind of shenanigans there perhaps.
Yeah, there probably was. But
– that never happens.
Yeah, I know.
A third party getting screwed over? What?
I know, really? Well, there was a third party in 1982. You know, but I don't know about – I mean, Stockdale was probably not the greatest pick, but in any event. Anyway, we've given Ross Perot a ton of pub. Rest in peace.
People forget he ran again in 96, not to the level of what his performance in 92, but he was still out there.
In 96, he got – it's funny. He got 8 million votes – a little over 8 million votes in 96, which was about the margin – popular wise that Clinton got in beating Bob Dole. Now again, the margin of states was roughly the same. Clinton beat Bush 32-18 and he beat Dole 31-19. So I don't know if that 8 million would have mattered in the Electoral College, but it would have evened things with Clinton if they all went to Dole. Yeah. And then he changed his party to and then he changed his running mate to Pat Choate, who I had no idea who the hell he was. But yeah, he wasn't taken as seriously. You got to remember, Clinton had a pretty good first term, so he probably wasn't going to lose either way. But give the guy credit. He hustled. He hustled. And he loved aliens. Mm-hmm. And he hustled. He hustled with aliens.
All right. And then we lost at the age of 88 the great novelist and essayist, book editor, professor Toni Morrison. She had won a National Books Critics Circle Award, and she also won the Pulitzer Prize in 1988 for Beloved, and won the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1993. So rest in peace. And then we lost also in September at the age of 75, the great journalist and author known mostly for her political reporting, Cokie Roberts. Mm-hmm. Steve, why don't you say some words about Cokie Roberts?
Cokie, it's a political reporter, had NPR, ABC News, PBS, and then probably most known nationally for, you know, stepping in for, God, why can't I think of his name? Peter on World News Tonight.
Jennings.
Thank you. And the week on ABC. So she was the replacement for him and would take over at times. So won 3 Emmys, Edward Murrow Award, inducted in the Broadcasting Cable Hall of Fame, known as one of the 50 greatest women in the history of broadcasting. When she passed, George Will was interviewed and said that, quote, she liked people on both sides of the aisle and friends on both sides of the aisle. If you don't like the game of politics, I don't see how you write about it well, he said. She liked the game of politics, and she understood that it was a game, which, if you think about it in the times we live on now, that that's an eye-opener that, you know, a lot of this is a game and people playing games with other people's lives. I just depressed myself. So I'll have to give a fun fact.
That's what we're here for, Steve.
Yeah, the fun fact was that Cokie Roberts' birth name was Mary Martha Corinne Morrison Claiborne Roberts. And she was called Cokie because her, I think it was her cousin, as a baby, couldn't say Corinne, so would always call her Cokie, and the name stuck. Hmm. So if you ever, you know, does anyone you know that has 2 first names, just at least you don't have 5.
Yeah.
Or 4 middle names, depending on how you want to look at it.
Well, at least we're helping some people with their bar trivia games. So.
Yes.
We got that.
And really, yes. What else is there?
Yes.
What else is?
I don't really. Yeah, that's true.
And then at the age of 86, also in September, we lost the former president of France, Jacques Chirac. And then to close our pop culture section, somebody who I grew up listening to, and Scott, I'm going to ask you to speak on first, though, since you basically are a radio guy. The first big shock jock, and we lost right at the end of the year, right after Christmas, at the age of 79, Don Imus passed away. The I-Man.
Quack, quack.
Scott, why don't you take the floor?
Quack, quack. Before we go any further, let's put aside the whole Rutgers thing, okay? Let's put that aside for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Because all shock jocks put their foot up their ass. Howard Stern did it. It was a big one. Yeah. Howard Stern did it a ton of times. But let's put that aside for a sec, because they all fuck up at some point in their lives.
Can I say one thing tangentially related to that?
Sure.
And we'll set it aside. My favorite, maybe not my favorite, but one of the most memorable things coming out of that to me, I don't know why it stuck in my mind, was I think it was The Daily Show just, you know, busting on it and busting on him and said something to the effect of, who is he to say this about this, you know, girls basketball team when he looks like a werewolf that ran out of energy mid transformation.
Imus was not one of the prettiest looking people on the planet, but that's what 30 years of Coke and Coke and vodka does to you. So,
I was like, my goodness.
I agree. Plenty of, Coke and, he had those problems, but, there were morning shows in radio even in the 60s, Oscar Anderson. I'm just going to use Northeast because that's what I know. But Oscar Anderson was the morning guy on 77 WABC back in the 60s, and Harry Harrison and those guys. But they were just, you know, morning guys who, you know, you were familiar with when you got up in the morning. They gave you the traffic and weather, and you listened to them while you're drinking your coffee and you got in your car and headed to work. But the I-Man, Imus, was the first one to entertain you. And he started in Cleveland. He was all over the place. But most of his career, obviously, was spent at 666 WNBC. And he changed things up. He He pushed the envelope. And again, as we just discussed, maybe pushed it off the table. But he revolutionized listening to morning radio. And he had a bunch of characters, Reverend Billy Saul Haggis, and he had he used to have the SNL Guido Sarducci on, and he used to have all the characters on. He used to call his brother Fred in New Mexico, who owned a garage, and he had a bunch of great skits, and he used to bash the shit out of people, and he was very nonpartisan. He made fun of Democrats. He made fun of Republicans. He made fun of independents. He made fun of everybody. He was nonpartisan when it came to bashing you. And at one point in the 80s in AM radio, 66 WNBC had Imus in the morning, Soupy Sales in the midday, and Howard Stern in the afternoon. I mean, you want to talk about a murderer's row of tremendous radio talent from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's just it was unfathomable in the early to mid 80s. In AM radio, guys, AM radio, which even by the 80s was pretty much archaic in some ways. But Imus and Howard Stern did not like each other. That's not a lie. So Howard's, for those that saw Private Parts, I'm sure you all did, he wasn't making that up. He did hate Imus, and Imus was a fucking asshole in the 80s because, again, he lived his life on, you know, two and alls, Coke, and vodka. So I don't think he remembers. I think it's safe to say Imus didn't remember between, like, 1974 and 1993. I don't think he remembers much of anything. And he was a very charitable guy. He had a ranch in New Mexico where he took care of sick kids. It was a 4,000 acre ranch near Ribera, New Mexico, for children with cancer. He did great things for people. He also sponsored Alcoholics Anonymous for those that had the issue because he went through it. He did kind of rebound a little bit after the Rutgers thing because then he went back to radio and got into TV. But eventually he just retired. You know, he got too old, obviously, and got sick. Spent a lot of time in a wheelchair the last year of his life. He might have put his foot in his mouth more than once, like any jock does. But for us here in the Northeast, Imus was the backbone of what ended up becoming great, funny morning radio that everybody tries to copy now, and not many can match it. I think Howard obviously is probably the best example of that. Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit sad.
Yeah,
it's a little bit sad. We've lost the concept now of the shock jock, and that we can sort of, I don't know, even look at that with kind of rose-colored lenses in a way. But, I mean, at least nowadays, you do have, of course, YouTube influencers. So, yes. You know, every cloud.
Yes. Well, and again, I'm not sitting here, flowering about Imus's career. I'm not condoning what he said about the Rutgers basketball team by any stretch. But because they're all fucking idiots and screw up at some point. It's obviously, but in the grand scheme of
them, why so many of them had like, you know, drug, you know, coke problems, alcohol problems.
Yeah, no, he was a fucking shit show. There was no doubt about that. But anyway, Tim's right though. I mean, the art of it really being genuine is over. And even Howard's really not that. I mean, if you listen to him over the last few years on Sirius XM, and he's now retiring soon. Even he's not that, I don't want to say funny, but he's not that shocky anymore. You know, the days of having, you know, lesbian porn stars shoving sausages down their throat, that was funny in 1987. But now it's like, oh, wow, there's a porn star shoving a sausage down her throat. Oh, look, there's two fucking porn lesbians making out. Like, all right, whatever. Like, it's like for wrestling fans, it's like the Attitude Era. It's like we've seen all this shit already. So, you know. Yeah, you know, it's, you know, and, you know, Crackhead Bob and Beetlejuice and the Angry Dwarf and all those guys. You know what I mean? It's
the oddities,
exactly. Those things were funny. So it's curious to see what the next wave of radio star will be, because when Howard does retire, it's the end of an era. It really is.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think there's going to be, right? Another generation? Once he's gone and people of that generation are gone, there's not really, I mean, I joked about it, but there's not really something waiting in the wings there to, you know, just kind of take those spots, if you will.
Well, I mean, back when Imus was in his heyday, I mean, I grew up, you know, from New York. My dad had on the car all the time, you know, because he listened to, that was his preferred station, except for when the Yankees were on. He had ABC on. But, yeah, I mean, what'd you have to listen to? You had AM radio, you had FM radio, which, you know, my dad wasn't listening to, unless it was CBS FM. And then also you had cassettes. You know, CDs weren't even around yet, really. I mean, those didn't come around till like, you know, the early to mid-90s. So nowadays, there's AM radio, FM radio, Sirius XM, there's podcasts, there's all kinds of different ways for you to get entertained or information in the car or at work or whatever. So you're not going to have that, you know, shock jock. That's unless it gets on like YouTube or something like that. Nobody. I mean, look, Ryan Seacrest was a DJ. We would have no idea who he was if he didn't, you know, get the job on American Idol. So that kind of shows you, you know, the state today. I mean, like Scott said, he did all of his, you know, for as much of a basically kind of a dick he could be on air or even off air. You know, he did do a lot of charity work with the Imus Ranch and everything, and he also gave us Rob Bartlett. For wrestling fans, he was on the.
So he's going to ruin the first 4 months of Raw, goddammit.
Uncut, uncooked, uncensored. So, yeah, I mean, he had really funny commercials I remember growing up as a kid. And, you know, he was a character. That's kind of really what to say about the I-Man. So that's going to bring it close to our first half of our in memoriam show for 2019. So stick around. We're going to dive into the worlds of music and movies and television with Scott Criscolo, Steve Willey, and Tim Capel. I am Andy Afton. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Play Sweet Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySweetNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the PlayStation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaySweetNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaySweetNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySweetNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to our In Memoriam 2019 special podcast here on the Place to Be Nation Pop Feed. I am Andy Atherton. I'm here with Scott Criscolo, Tim Capel, and Steve Willey. We're going to continue on memorializing those we lost in the worlds of music and movies and television. But first, kind of talk about Place to Be Nation, PlaceToBeNation.com, both of our podcast feeds right here on the feed you're listening to, the Pop Feed. The Hard Traveling Fanboys continue Arrow Month with a look back at the pilot episode from 2012. This Week in the NFL hits weekly. Roger and Johnny recap the last set of games, preview the upcoming weekend's batch. So their next episode will be their big Super Bowl preview as they look back at the championship round. Siblings Kevin and Mary host a brother-sister rewatch podcast. On the latest episode, they cover episodes 11 and 12 of season 4 of The Office. The latest Diamond Conversations, Man of Steel, Mike Verna discusses being an independent pro wrestler and an assistant baseball coach at Kingsborough Community College in Brooklyn, New York. Newest weekly show, It Was a Thing on TV. Hosts Mike Kloss and Greg Diener present a focus on obscure and or misguided television content. In episode one, they take a look at Math Game / Hollywood Squares. They are joined by Chico Alexander on episode two to discuss one of the most hyped shows of 1983, Mr. Smith. On the latest episode, Looking Forward, Looking Back, I was joined by Tim and Scott, as well as Jennifer Smith. We previewed the upcoming winter and spring movie releases. On the PTBN Pop Sketch special, The Skywalker Saga, A Proper Farewell, our Star Wars month wrapped up as Scott, you know, you kind of corralled all of us together and you hosted a lineup of guests, including myself, Jenny, Miranda. Who else was on that show with us?
The guy that's on this show, too.
Sorry, Tim. Tim, I'm sorry.
Right. Don't you love it, Tim? You're just a forgotten guy. You're just that other guy.
You're the other guy. Anyway.
Yes. Nope. And we,
it was an excellent show.
Skywalker Saga. Great show.
That was so much fun, that show. Yeah.
Thank you. That's a lot of fun.
Check it out. It's fun to do. I hope it's a good listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Definitely.
And so Tim is one of the Sarcastic Four on Marvel Age. They brought you part three and the year-end wrap-up of 1972. On the latest episode of Laughing Theater, one of my shows, Matt Souza joined me, and we watched Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy. Quite the fun watch. Also, don't forget to check out the PTBN Wrestling feed, which includes a dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE through yesteryear. That includes Scott on the Place to Be podcast, Scott and Steve on Main Event, Wrestling Warzone, Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jenny and the Gems, Body Pressure Luck, Talking WCW, which features some great sitcom picks in the last episode, if I'm not mistaken, Tim.
Yes, thank you.
And so much more. Subscribe today. While you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's Jenny Position podcast feed as well, the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop featuring Mr. Tim Capel, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, and much more. Don't forget to go to our social media pages. The Greatest Sitcom of All Time tournament is now underway. We are in round two. There'll be four matches per day. So be sure to like our tournament page on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You won't miss a single one. Don't forget, we've officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining greatest WCW match of all time. That's right. You'll have all year to research, promote, and build your list. Conversation rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches or on pro wrestling only message boards. Don't forget to check out PlaceMination.com. Each and every day, we have new voices, fresh takes, bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, pop culture, including Trent SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. Don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's weekly Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing online shopping over at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the PlaceMination homepage or use PlaceMination.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with no cost to you. So, moving on to the world of music, and we're going to start off with a person we lost back all the way back in January. He was the captain in Captain Tennille at the age of 76. Daryl Dragon passed away. Scott, why don't you talk about the captain?
Well, I mean, I remember my parents playing a ton of Captain and Tennille and the captain. You know, it's funny about them. It's kind of sad because they got divorced like 2 years ago and they were married for like, I don't know, 42 years or something. So it was sad because you thought that because they, you know, they were like that married couple group where like when they were singing the love songs to each other, you knew they meant them. And you don't see that often. Love Will Keep Us Together, Muskrat Love. You know, when I was a kid, I was like, what the fuck does that even mean? Muskrat Love. Is that like bestiality or something? Muskrat. Why a muskrat? Why not like a woodchuck or a squirrel? Why a muskrat? Is that a 70s thing, Steve? I don't know.
I don't know, but like something about a woodchuck chucking wood. And I'm trying to get there. And it's just I'm just not being able to finish.
he was like the brains. I mean, he wrote the music, wrote the lyrics, played the, you know, and she just looked pretty and sang. He was like the brains behind that operation. So I just wanted to mention that because my parents listened to them a lot when I was a kid. And
you know what else is sad? He's got a great name as Daryl Dragon, and yet people only know him as the captain.
Which is awesome. Captain Antonio. He's the only guy that I know, right, that has a great real name and a great nickname. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Captain Dragon. You know? How awesome is that?
Well, and the real name so much cooler than the nickname. It's like Ricky Steamboat, you know, Richard Blood or whatever.
And he's, yeah.
It's a cool shoot name, and it's like, yeah, I guess Ricky Steamboat works, but I want to see the wrestler Richard Blood.
Richard Blood, even though he was a babyface. But anyway, sad for the loss of the captain, but they were like an iconic in the 70s and early 80s.
Yes, and then also in January, we lost at the age of 66 the great singer James Ingram. He was a two-time Grammy Award winner and a two-time Academy Award nominee for Best Original Song. He had 8 top 40 hits on the U.S. Billboard chart, ranging from the 80s to the 90s. He was mostly known for like adult contemporary, including songs like "Baby Come to Me," which he did with Patty Austin, and "I Don't Have a Heart." And he was one of those voices. You heard it, you know, you immediately, you know, knew what was going on. Scott, you want to talk about James Ingram?
Yes, because James Ingram needs to be mentioned briefly because of one of the most iconic yacht rock songs ever, when he did "Yamo Be There" with Michael McDonald. Yamo, baby. Yamo, Tim Capel. Yamo. Yamo, Be There. He did other good songs, but Yamo, Be There is awesome. In fact,
how can I compete with Yamo, Be There?
I implore you, Andy, to use that as the outro bed. Yamo, Be There. There you go.
Yamo, Be There.
Anyway.
Well, you made me a believer.
Yamo, Be There. Come on, it's awesome.
Speaking of being a believer, at the age of 77,
nice.
Back in February, you see what I did there, Steve? We lost one of the members of the Monkees, the band / I don't know, were they really a parody? They had some good songs. We lost Peter.
No, they were a band.
Yeah, no, I mean they were a band, but they were really created as a kind of a counter to the Beatles, I believe.
Yes.
A very funny show, actually. I grew up on reruns of that. Peter was kind of the... I guess you want to say like the cute dumb one, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a good way to
speak. You know, because you had Mike was kind of like the leader, Mickey was the goofball, Davey was the heartthrob, and then you had, you know, this nice quiet one that's in the background. Very, you know, well known. He's from grew up in Connecticut here, but you know the Monkees didn't fare well in our little tournament we spoke about earlier. But it's definitely a fun show you should check out if you haven't seen it. Scott, you want to talk about Peter Tork?
Hey, The Monkees was on Nickelodeon in the 80s. That's where I watched it. Mm-hmm. Peter Tork was and you know what? He was the only one that was ever busted for drugs of all the Monkees. He was the one that got busted for, I think he had hashish on him. He was the only one that had to go to the can for that. Isn't that crazy? Yeah, it's sad because now there's only two beat. There's almost called them the Beatles. There's only two Monkees left. Michael Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz are left. We lost Davy Jones 3 years ago, I think.
Yeah, within
two or three years ago, yeah. I think we lost Davy Jones. I think he was the bassist. But it's sad because the Monkees were cool. I used to play the shit out of a greatest hits tape. I remember it had a red box and it had like a new hit that had come out at that time. I think I was a freshman in high school, so it was like 87, 88.
That was my wife's first concert, and I think it was that time. They like went and toured behind that.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I would love to. I never saw them live. Late 80s.
Yeah, I never saw them live, but I had no idea. I was watching a show. This is a side note. I was watching a show. Maybe it's just because maybe I was just dense. I don't know. But there's a show on Access TV called The Top 10 Revealed. Great show. And they did the top 10 songs about Vietnam. I had no fucking clue that Last Train to Clarksville was about Vietnam. I had no fucking clue at all. And then I'm listening to the words like Last Train to Clarksville, and I don't know if I'm ever coming home. Like, oh, okay, I guess it is. It's like fucking stupid. I had no idea. In fact, they didn't know
the Monkees. Because remember, Don Kirshner wrote all their stuff, or got guys to write their stuff. Huh. Don Kirshner is the one that made them a parody, and then they fired him and did Head, and then the albums sucked after that. But anyway, they were a much more influential band than anybody gives them credit for, and it sucks, Andy, that show got a shitty draw in the tournament, because it is a good show.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. It was a good show. I agree with Andy. Check it out. Tim, you ever watch the Monkees?
Not really my bag, baby.
No? It's funny.
No.
Funny show.
I always think of it as being more of a 70s thing.
It seemed like it. Well, it actually was in the
60s. Right. But I always think it was on in the 70s for some reason.
Yeah, no, it was on. I mean, I didn't watch it in the 60s, obviously. I watched it in the 80s on Nickelodeon. You watched it, Steve. I could tell. I mean,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
You of all people, I didn't want to watch it.
Yeah, I watched it in the 80s. I feel like there was a big comeback on MTV or VH1, maybe in the 90s.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Definitely. Definitely. Yep.
Yeah, it was on at night often. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Peter Tork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. I just looked it up. Davy Jones died almost 8 years ago in 2012.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Shit, I thought it was like 2017. Mm-hmm. Fuck, I didn't realize.
That was kind of a shock, too, when it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, we lost, at the age of 49, Keith Flint, the lead singer of the band Prodigy. And then, as well, at the age of 33, we lost the rapper Nipsey Hussle. That was a tragic one. And then, at the age of 69, we lost Leon Redbone. He was most well-known from, like, what was it, All Commercials or Cheer? Like, he would do the song. He sang the commercials, right,
yep. Scott? Yep. Yes. You know, yes, he did.
Leon Redbone with that deep voice. And then almost back-to-back, just 2 days apart, we'll talk about them separately, but we lost two of probably the top singers in rock from the 70s and early 80s. The first one, we're going to talk about Eddie Money, who we lost at the age of 70 on September 13th. One of my early memories of watching MTV was Eddie Money with the video for Shaken. Also, though, you know, visiting his catalog, Two Tickets to Paradise. I Think I'm in Love. I mean, just great, great songs. And fun fact, I probably may have told this before.
Yeah. But
his brothers is one of our security guards at work. Mm. His brother, Dan. Great guy, lots of great stories.
Which fucking guy?
The one that looks like a hard drinking Irish guy.
The guy that smokes cigars?
Yes, the guy that smokes cigars.
That's outside. His brother?
That is Eddie Mahoney.
No shit.
That is Eddie Mahoney's brother.
Wow. I never fucking knew that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that guy.
He's
security guys that I don't think's weird.
Yeah, not pulling back the curtain, but there's building security, there's our security. And he is one of those guys who makes it a point to know everybody's name. I have 200-some people that work on our floor.
That's just crazy.
Good dude. We've talked about his brother sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And I did wish him condolences. But, Scott, why don't you talk about Eddie Money for a moment?
I want to talk more about his brother. Man, I didn't realize that. I've been in the elevator with him. No, I'm only kidding. But that is cool, though. I mean, Eddie Money was iconic, and he's usually a guy. He must have shot some of these episodes of the Top 10 Revealed on Access TV before he died, because he's on them all the time. And his daughter is a smoke show, Jessie. She's like one of his backup singers. Oof! Wow, she's hot. Anyway, obviously looks like her mother, yeah, Shaken. I remember Shaken like one of the first videos on MTV in what, like 82.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to go back.
Wrong with him when I first saw.
I know, right? Because he talked. He's like Joe Cocker. He talked out of the side of his mouth. He sang out of the side of his mouth. Baby, hold on.
Side talker.
Yeah, he was. Baby, hold on. Was on what was on like every like KTEL or Time Life Sounds of the 70s collection. Baby, hold on was like on all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back. I want to go back and do it all. I love that song. What's the other one? Walk on Water.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I could walk on.
What's the other one? Tell me what Ronnie says.
They say Take Me Home Tonight.
Take Me Home Tonight. Thank you. Nice. Another good song. No, he had some iconic singles.
Just like Ronnie. Be my loving baby.
Yeah, Ronnie. Brought Ronnie from the Ronnie mm-hmm. Spector from mm-hmm. the Ronettes. Brought her back to prominence. Yeah, great singles. And then he had the cool show. So that was a sad one. When I found out he died, I was like legitimately sad when he died. That bummed me out.
Yeah, because he got – it came out that he was sick or he was but, yeah, everybody was they're saying, oh, he's going to be okay. And then he just took a very fast decline.
Yes, very fast.
You know, he had just been – I don't know if any of you guys watched the Kaminsky Method on Netflix. He appeared in an episode in season one as
– Oh, that's right.
He was performing at that like kind of smaller casino as Freddie Money. Because they're like, aren't you anybody? He goes, well, I am, but Freddie Money doesn't owe the IRS money. So it was quite funny. Still haven't watched season two. But and then
he's one of those artists who, for as many hits as he had, you kind of know the body of work better than you do the performer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like everybody knows those songs, but he's not like a household name, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess, you know, if you're a little younger and you hear his songs or somebody like Hall & Oates, you just know, you know, that, oh, it's by that same band or same group. He's like all these songs from the 80s and late 70s that are like big hits. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing the mark on my analogy, but on September 15th, we lost the lead singer of the Cars, Rick Ocasek. Is it Ocasek or Ocasek? I'm not sure.
Ocasek.
But yeah, that, you know, lots of great, the Cars were a great rock band from that time with Shake It Up, You Might Think, you know, Drive, even though he didn't sing that one. That was the other guy. Benjamin Orr. But yeah, the Cars were one of those great bands from the 70s and 80s that all the songs, like, you kind of move your head to. Scott, you gonna talk about Rick Ocasek as well?
Yeah, just quickly. Now officially we'll never see the Cars tour again because now both their lead singers have died because Benjamin Orr died. Oh God, early 2000s, I think. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, you'll never see them live again. But Benjamin Orr sang the awesome ballads like Drive. I was on a Ferris wheel with someone during that song. Sorry, Steve. We have to talk later. he sang the hot ballads. Who's gonna drive you home tonight? Like, he had a great voice. But Rick Ocasek sang like the plucky new wave pop songs, like You Might Think, Magic. When he's walking across the pool, that's a great fucking song. And they did good videos. That can't be understated. They did like some of the better videos on MTV in the early mid 80s. But
a lot of their 70s stuff you would think are 80s songs.
I know, right?
Sort of ahead of their time that way.
Just What I Needed. You've all I got tonight. You're all I got tonight. Moving in Stereo. You know, Mr. Mm-hmm. Capel, I'm about to talk about Moving in Stereo.
Oh, I hope you do.
Because that is the most famous car song to ever be in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I know Mr. Capel knows because he's agreeing with me. Mr. Willie, do you know what movie I am speaking of?
I do not.
Mr. Atherton, do you know?
No, you got me.
No? Steve, you were going to say something?
No, I'm sure I'll kick myself when I hear it.
A gorgeous olive-skinned beauty by the name of Phoebe Cates was coming out of a pool.
Oh, God, yeah. Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
And unsnapped the infamous red bikini while the Cars Moving in Stereo was playing. And Judge Reinhold was...
There was something else.
Let's
moving.
Just say... enjoying the view, if you get my drift. Yes.
What a movie.
Many of us used to the TV edit of that.
That sucked.
Gets the point across. Yep. Yeah, I liked how they also inverted that scene in Stranger Things this past season.
Yes.
That was very funny.
Is that when what's-her-name was coming out of the pool, right? The mother?
It's when, yeah, all the moms are sitting poolside and Billy the lifeguard struts by.
Terrible. Oh, no. God, she's hot. Mm. What a cougar. And now she's on Supergirl. It's awesome. Sorry, didn't go off the path there. Anyway, Rick Ocasek.
I was going to go off the path. Jennifer Jason Leigh from Fast Times.
If you ever watch the show Atypical on Netflix, which I recommend, it's a pretty good comedy.
Oh, yeah.
She kind of looks like Kira Sedgwick, and it's very off-putting.
She is kind of aging into Kira Sedgwick, isn't she?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I know it's Jennifer Jason Leigh, but I can't tell that it's Jennifer Jason Leigh.
And she was nude in two of her hottest roles. That, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and Single White Female. Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that one. True.
Whatever happened to Bridget Fonda?
I don't know.
We'll do a podcast. Yeah, I'm sure we'll come up with one for a podcast.
She did.
Whatever happened to Bridget Fonda.
She did like classes.
I was gonna say she showed up in one of Tim's favorites,
in the Gatorator.
Yep. The Gatorator.
Although I loved what was that La Femme Nikita movie she did?
Yeah, that was a good one.
Oh, that's right,
with Gabriel Byrne. Right. Anyway, yeah. So, all right. Tangent.
And Rick Ocasek was married to a Sports Illustrated swimsuit cover girl,
Paulina Porizkova.
Correct.
Yep. See, I can get that. Yes. What is wrong with me?
You didn't have to go too deep down the rabbit hole, Steve. That was more like a rabbit pothole to find Paulina Porizkova. So. Anyway. All right. Rest in peace, Rick.
Paulina Porizkova, the lead actress of Her Alibi. Anyway, talk about a rabbit hole. Anyway, so we also lost in October Peter Edward Ginger Baker, was an English drummer, co-founder of the rock band Cream. And Scott, this is one of yours.
Yes, it is. Yes. Ginger Baker, what are you going to say? One of the greatest drummers of the British invasion era of the 60s. I mean, him, Jack Bruce, and the god himself, slow hand, Eric Clapton. One of the greatest power trios ever. Disraeli Gears, tremendous album. He lost his fucking mind. I mean, there's a documentary of him living, I don't know where he lives, Africa or something, and he's fucking nuts. Well, he was anyway. But I mean, just one of the greatest power British drummers of the 60s. And then he joined Blind Faith with Clapton and Stevie Winwood. Tremendous drummer. Had to be mentioned. Mm-hmm.
And then in December, we lost.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I thought I was muted. I just saw the next name on the list.
I had to throw this one in here.
Steve knows what I'm laughing. This is, no one else is going to even understand why I'm laughing. So let's just move on.
Okay. All right.
I mean, you can memorialize the guy, but I'm not going to.
Juice WRLD passed away on December 8th. 2019, Chicago rapper, died at the age of 21. I know the kids loved him.
And I'm not laughing at him or his death, or I'm not laughing in a way that has anything to do with him. It's just the name reminded me of something. So, okay. Regaining my composure here.
Steve, you sound kind of old there too. I heard the kids love him, you know?
I mean, literally had a, it was a reminder today. I was working with a 14-year-old kid, and she talked about how he passed away. And and a cousin who was a huge fan as well. So one of the new wave of rappers that, I'm just too old to be familiar with. But hey, Run DMC.
Represent.
Beastie Boys have a new documentary coming out.
There you go. So, also in December, we lost the lead singer, one half of the pop duo Roxette, Marie Fredriksson. More known like towards the end of the 80s into the 90s, with such great songs as Listen to Your Heart, Dangerous, Joyride, The Look, which was probably their first big hit. And then probably the biggest one from the movie Pretty Woman, It Must Have Been Love. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great, great song.
Underrated band.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. And Dangerous is, I think, I was just watched that video, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. I was just in a 1989-90 music mood on YouTube. She was a smoke show.
Rabbit hole.
I was in a Roxette mood. And Dangerous is actually my favorite Roxette song. That's a great pop cut. And she's amazing looking in that. I mean, she had a great voice. Don't get me wrong, obviously. But she's looking fine in that video. And she aged well. But she had like – she had a tumor, I don't know, like 15 years ago or something. And
yeah, 17 years it said that she was been fighting cancer.
Yeah, crazy, right? God, what a warrior.
God, I was sick on Saturday and I thought I was going to die. And she's 17 years of cancer. Yeah. Wow. And it's insane that she was 61. Yeah. So, I mean, they didn't hit it until – I think 87 or so, 89, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And so she was in her early 30s at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Good band. Shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So rest in peace, Marie. Now we're going to move on to movies and television. First one on our list. At the age of 76, we lost Bob Einstein, better known as Albert Brooks's brother, or Super Dave Osborne, or Marty Funkhauser on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yes. Also played Larry Middleman on Arrested Development. Yeah. I mostly know him as Super Dave. One of the first like Showtime shows they had. Showtime didn't produce a lot of comedies like HBO did back then, but I just remember him up there with his stunt coordinator Fuji Hakahito. Doing stunts all the time. I'm not a big Curb guy. I still have to get back and watch it. But I also remember him appearing in one of the Ocean's movies, I believe, as Matt Damon's dad. I think it was the 13 edition. Yeah, it was fine in that small part he had. And then also in January, we lost the great Carol Channing, singer of Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, at the age of 97. And then we lost the actor Albert Finney at the age of 82. Then this guy surprised me how old he was. Jan Michael Vincent at the age of 74, because he was like a star in the 80s, kind of thing.
Yeah, but he couldn't put the bottle down. I mean, he just totally destroyed his liver. Mm-hmm. And then he looked like one.
Yeah.
But I remember him in Hooper. Underrated Burt Reynolds movie, by the way. We talked about that last year when we talked about Burt. Mm-hmm. Underrated Burt Reynolds movie, Hooper. And, of course, Airwolf.
Yes. Yeah, that's how I know him from, was from Airwolf.
Yeah.
Can't forget Airwolf.
But there were all kinds of wild stories about him after he sort of dropped out of the spotlight. I mean, I think you heard rumors for a while, like in the late 90s, that he had died or was mutilated in some fashion after a car accident. Just all this crazy shit, just... Because this was, you know, early days of the internet, and he was one of those names that people still recognized but hadn't done anything in long enough that you started to wonder. So it's a shame that he didn't ever get any kind of comeback story.
Yeah, I agree.
He's one of those 80s stars that you kind of wish, you know, would show up like in a Tarantino movie or something.
I mean, that would have made sense.
Then we lost Beverly Owen at the age of 81. She played Beverly Munster on The Munsters Show. And then we lost Brody Stevens, the comedian, age 48.
He's a sad one. He is a sad case.
Committed suicide.
I remember hearing him on, sorry, and I didn't put my name down.
That's okay. I'm not a slave to the format, Steve. I mean,
we're getting into names I recognize now, so here we go.
Tim's going to talk, yay.
Steve, I don't know why I'm singling you out, but are you familiar with Paul Gilmartin's Mental Illness Happy Hour podcast?
I have heard of it, but I have not listened to it.
He's been doing that thing for years.
Yeah, that's one of the OG podcasts.
Yep, I'm coming up on probably 10 years.
Yeah,
and, I don't really listen to it too much anymore, but a few years back, I was listening to it pretty regularly, and Brody Stevens was one of his guests and came on and talked about his struggles. And I didn't really know him that much from his comedy, but I definitely knew him from that podcast. And he would do this thing where he'd be like, I don't know, it was just a shtick where he's like, Brody Stevens, Stephen Brody. I don't know. In a weird voice. And, you know, when somebody
bears their soul in that way, you find yourself kind of rooting for them. So it was very sad to hear of his passing, even though I can't proclaim to be a fan of his work. It was just one of those names that's like, ah, man.
I knew I followed him, I think, on Facebook or something like that, because I remember him. He was on a lot of those, remember those I Love the Whatevers, all those talking head shows they would have? Mm-hmm. He was one of those comedians that was on those quite often. Was a huge baseball fan. I believe he may have played minor league ball, but big Cubs fan, Steve. So,
okay.
You would have liked probably some of the stuff he was posting. And then we lost, at the age of 89, Catherine Hellman, great film and television actress, mostly known for television. She was Jessica Tate on Soap, and then the great Mona Robinson on Who's the Boss, and followed by, actually, she played Doris Sherman on Coach when the later season Hayden went to the pros, and other movies like Family Plot, Time Bandits. I remember her in a very funny role. She played Mrs. Ogre, Overboard, yes, where she played Goldie Hawn's mother. And also, those of us who have kids and were subjected to the Cars movie, she voiced Lizzie. The old, I don't know what kind of car she was, maybe an Edsel, probably, in that. But, Scott, what do you got to say about Catherine Hellman?
Well, her two greatest TV roles, she was, of course, Mona on Who's the Boss. She was Angela's mom. And she was Doris Sherman, owner of the Orlando Breakers, on Coach. That's how I know Carolyn. Catherine Hellman. And I think she was on Soap too, right?
Yeah, I just said that.
You did say she was on Soap, right? Okay, I thought you were.
Yeah,
I was just sure if you mentioned that in between the movies.
Yeah, she was Jessica Tate, which is kind of like a free spirit kind of, I guess, character.
Yeah, well, she was a cougar plus on Who's the Boss, so she fits that role. But then she owned the Orlando Breakers on Coach. So, I mean, it could be the Carolyn Hellman Bowl if Who's the Boss and Coach somehow make it to a round in the turn. I don't know if they're in the same bracket or not.
Actually, Who's the Boss just got eliminated by Sabre.
Yeah. Oh, well then, all right, one down. And Carolyn Hellman's going to make a run because Coach is going to take on the Goliath known as Seinfeld. So I'm mm-hmm. looking forward to that. Anyway, Carolyn Hellman, Catherine Hellman. I always wanted to say Carolyn. Carolyn Hellman was a VJ on MTV. Catherine Hellman was a great actress. And again, she was instrumental in two of the greatest sitcoms of the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm. Next, we lost an actor very young, at the age of 52, one of the staples of the 90s, Luke Perry. Steve, you big 90210 fan?
Nice. I'll let Scott lead this one a little bit. We had talked earlier about it because I know that you're a little bit more of a bigger 90210 fan than I am, I believe. Mm-hmm. Oh, we killed Scott.
Yes. Speaking for Scott, a very huge 90210 fan here. And this one, Scott can come in at any time, I'm sure. This one, yeah, there you go. Took the words right out of my mouth.
Sucked. Continue, Tim. I'll piggyback you. Continue.
Sure. I mean, Scott, you and I, both huge 90210 fans, and huge fans of the character he played on that show. And this was just something that came out of nowhere. I mean, you heard he had this stroke and it's like, oh my God, very touch and go, but you're hoping for some good news coming out of that. And certainly for someone to be as young as he was, you don't think you're going to hear just a few days later that he has passed away. And you're like, what? Luke Perry? Man, and it was just like a gut punch, really. I'd say more so than any of the folks we've talked about tonight. I mean, not that I knew the guy or can say that there was any sort of personal connection, but having that kind of familiarity with his work, and just as one of those very quintessential 90s stars. And beyond Beverly Hills 90210. It just seems like a shame that there was – seemed like there was kind of a ceiling on how far he went just in terms of his stardom. Like, I always thought he was better than – just being a, and I'm not trying to say like, oh, he was just a, it's just a trashy TV show from the 90s. He did. He was just a TV guy. Not what I'm saying. I feel like he could have gone farther, but maybe the timing just didn't line up right for him. I don't know. I think he was a lot more talented than he got credit for. And it seemed like he was sort of starting to get that credit in later years. And still could have gone on to do great things. Again, only 52. So, man, well, that
he,
one took
he played the dad on seat. Riverdale, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. My daughter watches that show.
He also played a PBR star in, what was it, 7 Seconds, I think? We pimped the shit out of that show on my
Oh, yeah, the rodeo movie.
The rodeo movie, yeah.
But I haven't seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood yet, but he had a bit part in that, apparently.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, everything Tim said is right on.
Original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie.
Yeah.
Pike.
I saw that on opening night.
Did you really?
Yeah, I had free tickets to it.
Never mind. I think it's okay.
It was fun.
You saved yourself. You like, saw it on opening night with free tickets.
Yeah. Yeah, free tickets. But yeah, we had free tickets to who was the God? Who is the lead character, the female?
Christy Swanson.
Yeah.
Swanson. She's hot.
Yep.
How do you think she felt about not getting the TV part?
Well, she was too old, actually, probably by that time.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of were doing a different thing.
The high school, yeah.
It was a different take.
Yeah. Not Sarah Michelle Gellar did
pretty good. Oh, yeah. I had the poster. I got that at the... at the free showing, they gave out the poster, so I had the Luke Perry poster. I'm probably the only person in America who had Luke Perry on his wall, not for 90210, but for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I like it. I like
it. I think my saddest or most memorable TV moment for Luke Perry was that's a great one, and we talk about that often, Tim.
We do.
But I think I mentioned it on I think it was season 6
wife getting shot in the face
when he's holding Tony Marchette in the parking lot in the rain after the father accidentally whacks her instead of him.
Yeah.
That moment is like the
look what they did to her.
Yeah, look what they did to her. The stomach punch of Dylan McKay in that series, mm-hmm. And when he looked at her father and said, "The killing is done." That's such a great Dylan moment right there. And I still to this day wonder how much better this past summer's reboot would have been if he was there.
Man.
We talked about this, Tim.
We talked about that a lot.
I'm talking pop with Jenny, and I said, how much better that show could have been with him. Because I always said, and I said it on the show, it felt a little empty without him. And they do a good moment when they're all sitting on the plane and they go, it's great we're all here together. And then Jason goes, we're not all here.
Not all of us. Yeah.
And that was a knee to the nuts. I look at my seasons on my shelf here in Studio B, and it's
and you think of the stars of that show really coming into their own as actors as it went on, mm-hmm. And he was one. He and probably Shannon Doherty were the two who were like they could already like act when that show started.
Yeah, Shannon Doherty had TV experience before that.
Little House.
Look it up. Little House. Thank you. I was going to say. House. I almost said this old house.
Wow.
I knew it was House. I knew it was House.
Yeah,
the house. She was house something. But both of them, I mean, really kind of carried, especially the early seasons of that show.
Not that I don't want to say anybody was truly bad. Tori Spelling was god awful for a while as a performer. But you could tell they really leaned on the two of them because they were just so convincing. And you weren't sitting there going, wow, I'm really watching some bad acting here on a cheesy teen soap. And again, it's just one of those things that I don't know that he really got the credit that he should have, is all.
No. No, he was, you know, seen as like, you know, this teenage, you know, whatever, even though he was probably in his 30s when he was doing the show. No, it was, I watched it when it was on. Not the biggest 90210 fans like you guys are, but, you know. All right. Now moving on to Seymour Castle, passed away at the age of 84. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, yeah, okay. I thought I was on mute again by mistake.
I have that We're letting habit. You roll, brother. We're letting you roll.
Rest in peace, Seymour.
Yes. Yeah. Known for roles. <in the movie.
laughs> Somebody had to say it at some point.
Yes.
All right. Known for roles in Rushmore, Dick Tracy, Life Aquatic, other movies. The great Georgia Engel. We lost at the age of 70 back in April from the Mary Tyler Moore show. Sweet voiced, went on to play a lot of moms in sitcoms later on, like Everybody Loves Raymond, amongst others. Then we had Ken Kercheval, who was on the show Dallas. And Scott, you wanted to say something about Ken Kercheval?
Oh, he was. The antithesis of JR and the Ewing family, because it was Ewing Barnes, and they both everyone accuses Jocko of conning the other father out of the money and everything. But he was I wouldn't say he was a villain on Dallas, because I mean obviously JR was a piece of trash. So he was almost like the sympathetic schmuck. He was almost like the Washington Generals to JR's Harlem Globetrotters. He was the more likable. He was like the likable team that always lost. That's how Kinker. But he was a good actor, though. He's a good actor.
Why isn't Dallas streaming anywhere?
Good fucking question, Tim.
I want to watch
that garbagey TNT show, but the real one.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen parts of Dallas, but it was so one of those just before my time type shows that I would hear about and know that, talk about going down a rabbit hole, I would get like super into if I could watch it. Mm. So put that shit on Hulu. Come on.
Exactly. And it was when I was a kid, it was the third show on the awesome Friday nights on CBS when The Incredible Hulk was on at 8 and The Dukes of Hazzard was on at 9. And then I just watched the credits to Dallas because Texas Stadium was always in the open. And then my mom would watch it and I'd go in my room. But yeah, I mean, it was a great show. It was one of the first
solid lineup.
It was, right? And then when Incredible Hulk ended, everything bumped up an hour, and then Falcon Crest started at 10 o'clock. Again, another show my mom liked. I didn't watch it, but Dallas, just one of those great shows. And think about it, guys, quickly. The Who Shot JR at a time we didn't have the internet. So there was no fucking cheating, right? And there was a writer's strike in the beginning of the 80, I think it was the 80-81 TV season. So everybody had to wait like another 3 months for the season.
What a nightmare.
Could you imagine blowing your fucking brains out waiting for that without like no cheating? I mean, isn't that great? Those kind of days are lost now where we can actually totally legitimately get excited over a cliffhanger. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sucks.
Especially when they release it. I mean, that was part of the reason I think that The Mandalorian took off. Yep. Was because Disney released it on a weekly basis instead of dumping everything at once. I don't think it would have been as big of a deal.
No, I agree.
It's that water cooler talk or Facebook cooler talk. I don't know.
Talk. Or the mineral water talk.
I remember correctly, that episode was the second most watched television show of all time, like outside of the Super Bowl.
Yes, and the finale of MASH.
Yeah,
the
finale of MASH.
Yep.
Yeah.
Never will happen.
And that show was on forever. It's like, yep. I know the broad strokes of it, like the Who Shot JR, the, you know, the whole fucking dream season thing that they did.
Bobby in the shower, yeah.
Yeah, and the, you know, just the iconic characters from it, but I've never actually sat down and just watched it end to end. I definitely know show. I would get into
it. It was a good show. It was 90210 for rich Texas grown-ups, pretty much what it was. Instead of rich teenagers in California, it's rich Texans, rich old Texans.
And JR was such a dick.
He was. He was like Tony on I Dream of Jeannie. He was like the nice guy, and then he was a fucking asshole.
That laugh of his, that smile, oh, God.
He had a smile like I can picture it right now. Like, just yeah.
The hat on advertisements.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Then they tried to do a new version, like a reboot, right? A few years ago.
On TNT. Yeah. Yeah. Larry Hagman was on.
Yeah, and then Larry Hagman died.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Nice going. Chris Luke Perry, now Larry Hagman. Ruining reboots.
Yeah. All right, moving on. We at the age of 51, also in April, we lost the director John Singleton for such movies like Boys in the Hood. I believe he was involved in the remake of Shaft as well. Steve, I know you wanted to say some things about John Singleton.
Yeah, incredibly young, only 51 years old. I mean, a year younger than Luke Perry, but not just director of Boys in the Hood, but also wrote it as well in that. Got him nominated for Best Director and Best Screenwriter. And at the time, I think he still is, it was the youngest ever Best Director nominee and the first African-American ever to be nominated for Best Director. Did Poetic Justice as well. And from my days at working at Blockbuster, remember that as the first Janet Jackson movie?
Yes.
Learning, more known for probably the Coolio music video.
Is that the one where she works at the post office? Is it that one?
Poetic Justice? I've never seen it. I just remember the picture of Janet Jackson on the cover.
Right. One of them works for the post office. I remember them driving a postal vehicle. At least I thought so. I might be wrong. Let me see.
Tupac.
Yeah.
Poetic Justice.
Poetic Justice, God. Yep.
July 23rd, 1993. Janet Jackson's young woman... Lucky.
Higher learning.
Yep, young postal clerk named Lucky. Yep, he worked for the post office. I see, I do remember that. Okay. Good movie.
Tim Capel, do you know who was a bit player in the movie Higher Learning, who we just discussed moments ago?
I'm going to guess it was not Luke Perry.
No, it was Christy Swanson.
Oh, very good. Yeah, she's Omar another Fonte. One that sort of fell off, didn't she? Like, what? What the hell happened with her?
Yeah, she was in Big Daddy, where that movie was. Yep. With Adam Sandler. Mm. That really didn't do much after that.
She was in that movie with...
Shut up. She was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Chrissy Swanson was?
Yeah, she's the one that said, my friend saw blah, blah, blah at 31 Flavors, and he said blah, 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 that girl.
Yeah. That's a super bit part.
Yeah.
What Omar Epps... in a lot of John Singleton movies. Surprisingly, wow, he was really, he's only 46 years old, so he was just a youngin'.
Mm.
Yeah, but John Singleton, just a lot of great movies in the 90s kind of fell off. Not really sure, you know, another guy like we've been talking about who didn't do that much of a, it was Shaft. He did Too Fast, Too Furious, but there was a huge break in between that initial set of three and those last two movies. Mm-hmm. My little fun fact for him is created the music video for Michael Jackson's Remember the Time.
Oh. With Magic Johnson.
Hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Was McCulley in that one too?
Oh, no. I think
because he was in black and white.
I think
black or white.
Though. Iman was in that as well. It was set kind of like in Egypt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, also, and then in May, we lost at the age of 74, Peter Mayhew, a.k.a. Chewbacca, well, the original Chewbacca. We talked about it a lot on the recent Star Wars month, but I know Scott, you wanted to say some things about Peter Mayhew.
That's it.
Let the Wookiee win.
The worst Chewbacca impersonation that's ever.
The woman with the Chewbacca mask was better.
By the way, Christy Swanson was in Pretty in Pink too.
Gotcha. And Zeus, the wrestler, Tiny Lister, also in the Remember the Time video.
Yes. Christy Swanson's so hot. Peter Mayhew was not hot. But Zeus was so hot. Yeah. Peter Mayhew, what can you say? He was one of the big four. He deserves just as much credit and just as much respect as Harrison, Carrie, or Mark, because Chewbacca is one of the big four, and we talked about that on the show.
Yeah, arguably one of the best characters in all of the movies, yep. And the one that Chewbacca and C-3PO crossed over a lot of the movies, but I don't know. Would you guys say Chewbacca probably bigger than Yoda in terms of non-human characters?
Yeah,
I would argue that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I mean, he's the co-pilot of the Falcon.
Yeah.
Pure and simple. Chewie here tells me you're looking for a passage to the Alderaan system. It wasn't just some other thing. It was Chewie. By the way,
he's also this 7 foot something guy in a wearing a big shaggy rug.
What's
basically
Mark Hamill saying Empire Dreams? A big dog suit.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember something.
What was the funny line Mark Hamill said? He said something else. And about, Go ahead.
He was very funny in that. And it's, you see it for the first time and you're like, holy shit. But it's kind of amazing how quickly you just sort of acclimate to it and just, this is what we're doing. This is what the movie is. So It just, certainly he has his moments and he has some good scenes, but it doesn't take you out of the picture sitting there watching this guy in a big shaggy dog costume.
And the other funny part is
very
Mark
easily could for that kind of thing.
Yeah. And Mark Hamill says in Empire Dreams, he goes, 20th Century Fox reps were very upset because the Wookiee had no pants.
Yes, that was the other thing.
The Wookiee has the Wookiee no, had pants. No pants.
They wanted to put pants on him.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Peter Mayhew. Mm-hmm. Big time.
All right. Then at the age of 72, also in May, we lost Peggy Lipton, best known from the Mod Squad. And at the age of 97, we lost Doris Day, the great Hollywood starlet.
I can't believe she lived that long. God rest her soul. Mm-hmm. What a career, huh?
Oh, yeah.
What a career. Amazing.
And then this one kind of hit me because I grew up loving this guy. At the age of 85, we lost the great comedian Tim Conway. Grew up watching the Carol Burnett Show with him and how a lot of his characters and a lot of the famous sketches and how he would torture Harvey Korman.
Yes.
And making him break character, especially in the dentist sketch.
Yep.
I watched that not too long ago.
Oh, yes. It's so great.
He's just merciless. Merciless. He was like a shark. He smelled blood in the water. He just went for it. I mean, he had other movies like, his movie career was, he was with the Apple Dumpling Gang. He had a small role in Cowboy 1-2. There was actually a horse racing movie he was in with Harvey Korman called The Long Shot, which was quite funny. If you're a fan of those guys, I suggest you seek it out. He was just a dwarf on golf. I mean, just the physical humor he could do. And that character with that stares, like when he was on it wasn't Mama's Family the show, but when they started with the character on Carol Burnett, he would sit there with that the radio piece in his ear and just tell these outlandish stories, or he played that old guy that would move really slow. I mean, just a funny guy, the great Tim Conway. Scott, you wanted to say some words too about Tim.
Well, I don't want to go any further. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, one of the funniest guys ever. At one point, him and Carol on that show pretty much tried to make Harvey crap his pants. He's just that good. Love the Apple Dumpling Gang though. What a great movie. Mm-hmm. Also on Disney Plus. Yeah, that's all I got to say. You said everything. He's a tremendous, tremendous actor, tremendous comedian.
And then we had the actor Max Wright at the age of 75, best known as Willie from the 80s sitcom Alf, which actually just got knocked out of the tournament as well.
Yes.
So he was a, you know, he had other bit parts. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, I was just going to make a lame joke about my name being the same and, you know, possibly being named after Max Wright, but I was actually named after Gordon Shumway.
Okay.
It's past my bedtime, guys. Past my bedtime.
Oh, well, we'll try to.
They can't all land.
No. You know, nobody bats 1,000, Steve. You know, it's you bat 300 in the Hall of Fame. Then we lost, actually, somebody.
Here we are talking sports again. I don't know.
Oh, boy. Sorry, Tim. Then we had Artie Johnson, who, you know, a lot of people probably may, I don't know if they confuse him with, you know, it's from the kind of like that same comedic type as Tim Conway. Not as the athletic, you know, physical, but very good accents. Very interesting. The German character he used to play on Laughing. You know, one of those just guys that was just funny would show up and just you know, hit it out of the park. We lost him at the age of 90. Then we lost the actor Rip Torn at the age of 88, known from lots of parts, mostly from the Larry Sanders Show, as well as, remember the movie Beastmaster, right, with Mark Singer? He played the bad guy in that, as well as he played Patches O'Houlihan in Dodgeball. You know, the five D's of dodgeball: dive, dodge, duck, dive, and dodge. Something like that. But he was really funny in that part, actually.
Wasn't he in Men in Black?
Yes, that's right. He was Zed in Men in Black as well. Just a good, great delivery of lines, that guy. Rucker Hauer, the great action star, B-movie actor at the age of 75. We also lost at the age of 75 back in July, Russie Taylor, best known as the voice of Minnie Mouse. Here's a fun fact. She was married to Wayne Allwine, who did the voice of Mickey Mouse. So there you go. There's your little trivia. And then at the age of 79, back in August, we lost Peter Fonda. Hollywood royalty, comes from the great family. His father, Henry, his sister, Jane. Now, you know, Easy Rider on Golden Pond, you know, lots of great parts. And then we lost also Valerie Harper at the age of 80 in August, the great, you know, from Mary Tyler Moore, and well as the spinoff, Rhoda. And then she had Valerie's family, and then had her little spat with, I believe it was NBC, and it came back as the Hogan Family, sans Valerie Harper. Steve, you want to say some things about Valerie Harper?
Yeah, that was pretty, I mean, pretty much all. Like, I didn't really, Mary Tyler Moore Show is just a little bit before my time. Mm-hmm. So most known for that, and Rhoda, you know, won Emmys and Golden Globes for that, but Valerie, that show, for some reason, I really got into from the beginning. I think it was, you know, it was a, you know, NBC at that time was really known for its sitcoms, and I was always kind of a sucker as a kid for your family slice of life, you know, one, you know, two camera sitcoms, and that was a good one. And then she just disappeared. And, you know, being as a kid, you don't like, okay, what, she died? Okay, clearly the actress didn't die because, like, she's on TV Guide. Like, what happened? And it was one of the first times that, as a kid, you kind of realize, oh, there's stuff that goes behind the scenes on these television shows. You know, because it was a very public pay dispute. Because it was a pretty decent-sized show. And then all of a sudden, whoop, Sandy Duncan's there, and you know, they wrote her off as a death. And Sandy Duncan, I believe, played the sister. Was it the dad's sister or Valerie's sister?
No, she played, I think, the father's sister.
Yeah. And it remained Valerie's family for a while, which was kind of awkward.
So the Connors is not the first time they've pulled this move. Is what
no.
No, yeah, there's precedent.
Very reminiscent.
Mm. But that was over money, not because she's an asshole.
Well, just in the sense of the star of the show is now not even on the show anymore.
Yeah. And Hogan's Family was still pretty popular.
It lasted quite a few years.
It stayed on NBC, and I think it jumped to CBS, I believe, for a year. Because it was, who was on that show? Who was the...
Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman, yeah, was the oldest son. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my Valerie Harper was a little hard to find a fun fact for. She was also a Tony Award-winning actress as well. But she was part of Second City. She was one of the founding, not the founding members, but a very early on member of the Chicago improv troupe Second City, which I didn't realize how old that was. It started in 59. It's, you know, more known for like Bill Murray, John Candy, like a lot of the old Saturday Night Live guys.
Mm-hmm. All right. Scott, did you have anything you wanted to say about Valerie Harper?
I liked Rhoda as a kid. It was a good show. Trying to think what other, I'm looking at other movies she was in. Freebie and the Bean? I remember that movie, actually.
Yeah, I don't either.
Television. Love. She was on a Love Boat? Well, then again, who wasn't?
Oh, yeah, she was on a bunch of small stuff like that.
Valerie. Is Valerie the show? She was on Melrose Place? Shit. Hmm? I totally forgot about that.
Did she go on Melrose Place?
Two episodes, Mamma Mia and Last Train to Baghdad. She was Mia Mancini. Interesting. And she was on, I do remember her on that,
Michael's mom.
Yeah. I remember her on That 70s Show too. She was on an episode. So
yeah, she popped in on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Couple episodes here.
So Valerie, is that the show you were talking about, right? Valerie?
Yeah, it was Valerie, then it turned to Valerie's Family, then it turned to Hogan's Family.
Yeah, it was Valerie Harper, Jason Bateman, Josh Taylor, Edie McClurg.
Edie McClurg was on that, yep. Basically playing a similar thing. It's like the nosy next door neighbor.
Josie Bissett. Yum.
Melrose Place also, right?
Yes, exactly. There you go. Anyway, yes.
Married to Michael on Melrose Place.
There you go. Yeah.
Muppet Show, first season. I remember that episode.
Yep. Always goes back to the Fox shows.
All comes full circle.
Full circle.
Our primetime network stories.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Next on In Memoriam, Party of Five.
Party of Five. The shitty reboot.
The entire party.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. Whole thing. Look shitty.
Scott Wolf. Scott
Never
Wolf.
Aged.
You know, the one thing I discovered about Party of Five, I tried to watch it again, and when it was on Netflix, the show's really boring.
Did it not age well? Because
it seemed not to. Like, maybe the first few seasons were okay.
Jeff Campbell did. I thought she aged
like,
well.
Well, the show itself was just like, it's like they ran out of gas really early.
Yeah, like, I think after Scott Wolf's, the season where he was having alcohol problems, it kind of completely dropped off after that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of soaps, though.
Yes.
Yep.
Diane Carroll.
Yeah, we lost her at the age of, I'm looking it up now, 84. She died back in October. Best known for the series Julia from the late 60s. She was the first series to star a black woman in a non-stereotypical role. And also in the 80s, speaking of primetime soap, she played Dominique Devereaux on Dynasty. She...
so good.
She went to Aaron.
Another Spitz. One they need to put on streaming. Come on.
I know, right? What the fuck? Kind of buy the fucking DVDs. Jesus.
Surprised nobody in NXT has the name Dominique Devereaux these days. but, you know, she apparently went up to Aaron Spelling and said, told her, I want to be the first black bitch on television.
And, nice.
And he made it happen. True story. She also was an Academy Award nominee for Claudine in 1974.
I have never heard of Julia or Claudine.
It's like, that's what the neat thing about these shows are, like, well, you know, doing In Memoriams, I guess. Boy, that sounded bad. You know, silver lining to doing an In Memoriam show is, you know, discovering all this other work.
This is true.
Yeah.
And then also nominated for an Emmy later on as the mom of Jasmine Guy's character on A Different World.
Yes. Shit. Is that
streamed anywhere?
It'll be on Peacock, probably.
Yeah. Because Dallas isn't even on CBS All Access.
Damn it.
Fucking waste.
This is bullshit.
It is.
There's not one good show between 1973 and 1993 that's like streaming. Except maybe Cheers.
It's probably rights issues.
All in the Family is not streaming. The Jeffersons is not streaming. Three's Company, I don't think, is streaming. Any great show in the Tropicana bracket is not streaming.
St. Elsewhere is streaming. St. Elsewhere is on Hulu. That's pretty
Hill
good.
Hill Street Blues, I think, is on Hulu too.
Previously, yeah, I think that's Hill Street Blues.
Blues.
Bam, bam, bam.
That right. Show has not aged well. I tried to watch a couple episodes. Didn't age well.
Really?
Tough to watch now. Yeah, tough to watch now. I don't think St. Elsewhere would be, but Hill Street Blues is tough to watch.
Anything else?
See, I'm a sucker for a medical drama, though, so that's
my... Yeah, I think St. Elsewhere would be good.
God, Howie Mandel, St. Elsewhere, still on TV. Still, Howie Mandel, you know, on America's Got Talent. That guy's had a...
I know, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My little quick fun fact on Diane Carroll, though, is she was originally on – her first appearance on television was in the 50s, was on the game show Chance of a Lifetime, and won $1,000 for her singing.
Wow.
So that is a 40-year television career right there.
That's a nice prize for the 50s, too.
Yeah.
All right. You know, not often in life you meet, you know, people named Rip, and we actually lost two Rips last year. We lost Rip Taylor as well in October. More known as a, I don't know, not really an actor, more just like a personality. You know, appeared on a lot of the great game shows. The $1.98 beauty show was one of his claims of fame. This is a stretch even for younger fans. May know him from Wayne's World 2. I mean, where he just kind of shows up at Wayne Stock. You know, you have a, you know... You have the Jim Morrison, a half naked Indian, Aerosmith, and Rip Taylor. If that's not a recipe for success, I don't know what it is. And then we lost a great character actor, actually, at the age of 79. I'm probably going to butcher his last name. Rene Auberginois, I guess is how you would pronounce it.
I think it's Auberginois.
Auberginois. But he was. I remember him from Benson, where he played, I forget the character's name, but mostly he was mostly the foil to Robert Guillaume's Benson character. He was also Odo on one of the Star Trek shows.
Mm-hmm. He was Odo on Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. Tremendous show, tremendous character, yes.
And he would show up in bit parts here and there. I think he was the bad guy in the Police Academy Miami Beach movie. So, you know.
Boston Legal. He was the firm counsel for the first couple seasons, which that show is aged interestingly. But yeah, he was like kind of one of the – he was like a straight man in this, you know, in this asylum basically of a law firm.
All right. And then back on December 8th, I think part of our childhoods – kind of die with the passing of the great Carol Spinney at the age of 85, who voiced two of the most iconic characters from most people's childhoods. Because who didn't grow up watching Sesame Street? Who, I mean, even my kids have watched Sesame Street and are familiar with Big Bird. My daughter, who's 17, I think when she was born in 2002... we dressed her up as Big Bird, I believe, for her first Halloween as a baby. she was about, I don't know, 6 months old at the time.
And she was 7 feet tall.
Yes, she was. It was amazing trying to get her head to be up, you know, like that. But anyway, yes, Carol Spinney voiced our childhood. Basically, you know, he voiced the childlike Big Bird. And then the cranky curmudgeon, Oscar the Grouch. Now, Steve, I know you have very strong feelings and really want to talk about it. I mean, Steve doesn't make a lot of threats, but you know, he did threaten me off mic. That's saying, Carol Spinney, or I'll deck you.
That's mine. 50 years, essentially, he played Big Bird. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and Oscar. Because he stayed on until almost the very end of his life. I think, it wasn't like last year I had a couple deaths that hit me. You know, you guys were, you know, affected more by Luke Perry this year. Last year for me it was Anthony Bourdain and Dolores O'Riordan. Carol, it wasn't like this was unexpected by any means, but yeah, like you said, Andy, really all of us grew up with that show. It's a lot harder for kids to see it nowadays. It's on PBS, but it's on HBO, a little bit on PBS, but I still remember the episode when everyone figured out that Snuffleupagus was real. I still remember when Mr. Hooper died and Big Bird was the one that, you know, was kind of going through the grief process and, you know, kind of learning what death was. And then by proxy teaching the children watching it what death was. And it's not like this is just some, you know, little kid's show you'd find on like Nick Jr. or something. There really wasn't many places to get educational television. You had your Saturday morning cartoons. But during the week, it was Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers were the big ones. Mm-hmm. So, I think we've kind of, over the last few years, maybe forgotten about how important Sesame Street is and how important it should be. Have you seen in the last year the girl who worked in New York and worked in entertainment? I think she worked for PBS and had access to Sesame Street and then brought her mother to the studios where they made Sesame Street, who was, she was a probably, I'd guess about 60. And basically they brought as a surprise mom for her birthday, brought her in to the Sesame Street studios, which is, you know, designed just like the neighborhood, just like you would picture it. And it's one of the most endearing videos. Like, the mom just broke down, even seeing the puppets, and then, like, meeting Big Bird and just, like, holding Big Bird. This is like, man, that is, you know, Chewbacca's, like, the sci-fi version of Big Bird, almost, in a way. Like, two giant, lovable, Muppet-like characters. And, yeah, I mean, my kids know Big Bird. I know Big Bird. My parents know Big Bird. My grandparents know, you know, like multi-generations of people grew up with that show. So it's, you know, a loss of the original characters. It's like when, you know, you lose Jim Henson in a way. Obviously, yep. Carol Spinney didn't make, you know, the Muppets, but he was definitely a part of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I seriously, if I ever had met like one of them, I would mark out. I would be like, Ernie was my guy. But
yeah, me too. I would break down. And this, yeah, we'll have to find the video. It's like she just kept breaking down and crying. Like even meeting the Muppet on the puppeteer's hand.
Yeah.
Still, just and I think I would too.
Yeah, Super Grover or the Blue Guy. I mean, no, this is not what I ordered.
You know, that guy. He was Oscar the Grouch. He died in Connecticut. He lived in Woodstock, Connecticut.
But yeah, he's killing all these people off, Scott. I know say your state is a dump, but...
I know. Jesus fucking air. Christ. Bummer.
But yeah, one of my favorite... the Muppet movie has a lot of great cameos. I think Big Bird is probably my favorite because it's just so funny and it went over kids' heads, too, his joke. Because, you know, they see him kind of like walking. He's not hitchhiking. Big Bird wouldn't do that because that's not what you do. And they ask him for a ride. And he says, no, thank you, because they're going to California. He's like, no, I'm going to go to New York and break into public television. <You know? laughs> And Fozzie just has this like look on his face like, okay. And was seeing that joke, though, as like, you know, when the Muppet movie came out, like 79, 80. I mean, I was like 7 years old. I didn't get that joke. You know, nowadays, whenever I see it, I just, I crack up because I know exactly what he's talking about.
Big Bird has a birthday.
Does he?
March 20th is his birthday. News to me.
There you go.
News to me.
And then just a few more to round out our list tonight. We lost the actor Philip McKeon at the age of 55 back in December. Most known for the show Alice. He played Linda Lavin's title character's son. And then the great character actor, Danny Aiello, we lost at the age of 85. So many great parts. My personal favorite Danny Aiello part probably is Phil Cantone from Harlem Nights, where he was just a smarmy, smart, thought he had, you know, Sugar Ray and Quick. He thought he had them all, you know, figured out and pinned down, and he's the one that actually ends up getting screwed in the end. And you guys got Danny Aiello thoughts?
Do the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of great stuff. So that's going to kind of wrap up. Nobody I forgot, right?
I'm sure we slipped somebody. I mean, I tried to rummage through the list as best I could, but I think we got everybody.
Yeah, if not, someone, you know, put it on the Facebook page, someone tweet at us, and then we'll get back to it in the In Memoriam 2020 episode.
Exactly.
We'll remember to include it.
Right. We will sadly do this again this time next year, I'm sure.
Already starting out hot.
Yes. Yeah. We had quite a few early on. So we'll chat about that a year from now.
Most joyous part that came out of this podcast for me, besides talking with you guys, of course, Different World is on Amazon Prime, all 6 seasons.
Oh, wow.
See? So I am that on my list and starting to watch that because it is a hell of a show. And it doesn't have that Bill Cosby kind of stink on it.
Marissa Tomei in season one.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Cree Summer.
Okay. So anyway, so we'll kind of go around, see what everybody's up to, what everybody's got going on. Steve, what do you got coming up?
Well, of course, I'm on The Main Event with Scott and our good buddy Nate Milton, and we just did a little bit of the sitcom talk of our own on our last show.
Yes, we did.
Patrick Duffy was talked about on that episode as well.
Yes. Oh, wow.
So, and then coming up with
a little step-by-step love happening.
A little step-by-step hate. I don't remember the show that it was going up against, but it was way too close. And
up against thank God it lost.
Yeah. Basically, we were saying, why did it get so many percent of the vote compared to the Cosby show? But anyway, do that. I've been trying to get Jordan and Duncan and Glenn to do some Tell Me Something Good podcasts, and we'll hopefully start that within the next month, though I've been saying that for the last 6 months. Okay. It's not my fault, folks. It's not my fault.
Okay. You mentioned a movie earlier, but hopefully we can schedule the movie that you picked. You mentioned earlier for Laughing Theater.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I am. Let's look at next month and get that done.
Yes. Looking forward to it. Speaking of Laughing Theater, though, Tim, you're actually going to be on the next episode.
What?
Oh, that's right. We're doing that pretty soon, aren't we?
Yes. We will be watching the great Bill Murray comedy Groundhog Day.
Yes. One of my favorites of all time.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of become that for me.
Yeah. You kind of, scheduled yourself into a corner there when you picked that movie, so.
This is true. Well, somehow I turned into, like, your Bill Murray correspondent, and I'm not sure how this happened, but I'm going to roll with it. It's all fine. Right. I like that.
Okay. What else you got coming up, though? I know there's a new talking boop over on the Jenny Position, correct?
Yes. Just dropped. You can listen to that now on the Jenny Position podcast feed. It's Talking Pop. We had a new guest and new to podcasting. It was our friend Sean Kidd.
Some of you know him, some not, and everyone will get to know him a lot better after that pretty entertaining episode, in my humble opinion. Also, gosh, on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we just dropped an episode of Talking WCW, we being myself, the aforementioned Jennifer Smith, and Greg Phillips. And Jenny chose the subject of this most recent episode, and that was the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan.
Yes.
We had an eclectic selection of matches to talk about. Mm-hmm. And because I'm only doing four podcasts, I'm starting a new one, and I'm not going to announce what it is just yet, other than to say it is another wrestling podcast. And that's going to be a regular thing starting soon. And that's all I will say on that front. And by soon, I don't mean in 6 months, like more like a couple weeks at most. So, yeah. Should I do Twitter, or are we going to make another rotation for that?
No, whatever you – let's get all out at one fall swoop.
Get it all out at once. All right. Twitter, I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-68. Twitter, yell at me. Do whatever you want to do. It's fine. I can take it.
All right. Scott, what do you got coming up?
My Twitter is at PTB Podfather, and I'm going to do what Justin does when the show goes too late. I got a lot of shows. Listen to them. That's what he does when he's not in the mood anymore. No, I'm only kidding, guys. It's been a great show. Let's see.
Do the one I forgot to mention.
Yeah.
the one that I saved for you. The one that I saved for you.
Oh, okay. The one we did last night, or am I missing?
Yeah. Well,
that one. Okay.
Just generally.
On the Jenny position, we did do the Journey Through Infinity. We just recorded the most recent one last night. I'm not sure when it's dropping, but. We won't tell you which, you should know what the next movie is, but it should be dropping soon. Steve, you, me, and Nate, next week, episode 141 of the main – when is this dropping, Andy, in like 6 months? I mean, do we know – does the pop boss know when – will this drop by the time the 2020 guys are done being dead, or what are we
– It should be dropping
soon. Done being dead.
Yeah. All right. So we'll say that the next episode 141, Steve, you, me, and Nate, we will recap this weekend's Royal Rumble. We will recap NWA Hard Times, even though the Doctor and I will be doing a main event reaction special for that. And yes, Steve's favorite thing on the whole planet, besides coming up with dead people fun facts, bringing back the TNA pay-per-view recaps.
Yes, 2002, baby.
We're going back to November of 2002.
Episode 22. We've done 21 episodes already.
I can't believe we've done – Steve, seriously, right? We did not jump off and let it kill us. We're thriving on it.
I'm ready. I'm stretched. I am relaxed. It's like a taper after a long, you know, exercise program or sports season or – yeah.
There we go. Yep.
It's hard to come back from little people masturbating in trash cans.
That is true. It is true. But we've survived, Tim.
We survived all that stuff. I'm sure there's stuff that – I mean –
we survived. Yeah,
we haven't gotten a Tony Schiavone in a Hawaiian shirt or
sports homophobia. We've survived homophobia. We've survived racism. We've survived every single type of social taboo and these fucking shows that we possibly could to get to where we are now. So should be very exciting. On the pop feed, this great show, Mr. Atherton, you, me, the Doctor, and Mr. D'Amato will be doing the next Year in Pop soon, I think, right? In the next couple of weeks,
yeah,
I think?
About 2 weeks, yeah.
About 2 weeks, 1980, as we get into the decade of the 80s. We'll be recruiting you gentlemen down the line very soon to start doing some years. Again, check out that Rise of Skywalker, or the Skywalker Saga Star Wars special we did. Very exciting. Oh, that's right. One more thing I wanted to mention on the wrestling feed. I did part one of my two-part countdown revealing my GWWE greatest pay-per-view matches of all time. I did 100 to 51. And I want to make this clear before I got my balls broken last night. Yes, it is 2.5 hours. However, it is interactive. I don't expect anybody to listen to just my voice for 2.5. If you do, all the power to you. But it's meant to be interactive. I pause after talking about every match, and I expect the, you listeners, pause the pod, watch the match, and generate your own opinion. Hit me on Twitter. Tell me what you think. Am I an idiot? Am I a genius? Whatever. Let's have fun with it. So it is a 2.5 hour pod, and I talk about 50 matches, but I expect everyone to pause and watch the match and enjoy it. Get excited about it. I'm excited for this stretch project, Andy, that you mentioned earlier, and Steve and Tim. It seems like the buzz for this GWCW match project is through the roof. So I expect to do that a year from now as well. So I hope everybody gets excited about that too. But check out my pod that's on the wrestling feed, where I counted down my first 50 of the top 100 greatest WWE matches of all time, and have some fun with it, and maybe formulate your own opinion. So I think that's everything.
All right,
did I cover them all? I think I did.
So for me, it should be out by the time you hear this. The first in the new series of Pop Goes the Classics, myself, Miss Miranda Berthold, and Mr. Chad Campbell, we're going to be discussing from the beginning, starting with 1937 Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the Disney animated features. So look for that coming about monthly. Yes, first episode, the pilot, if you will. Tremendous. Had a great time talking Disney with Miranda and Chad. So look for that coming up on the Pop Feed. As well as I will be, I'm the third man in the booth on the next episode of Body Press Your Luck. That should be up by the time you hear this as well. As I mentioned, Tim will be showing up in the Laughing Theater on our next episode. After that, I will be doing an Oscars preview. Right now, I have Miss Miranda Berthold and Andrew Reich may be coming on that show, as well as one of our writers from the site making his Place to Be Nation podcast debut, Mr. Paul Bernardo. Then, obviously, more episodes of Looking Forward, Looking Back, where we look back at the fall and winter. We do our Scott Pilgrim live watch as my prize. Nate Milton will be joining me in Laughing Theater. We're going to be watching Black Dynamite. Scott mentioned Year in Pop, new episodes of Great Debate, and other shows coming soon. And yes, I will be joining the Wrestling Feed as well with a show I hope to do to start quarterly. But I hope it's something a little different from the other shows on the feed, and I hope it'll be a nice compliment to that great content. So, I want to thank you guys for getting together tonight and discussing this morbid subject, but hopefully, you know, what we were here to do was really memorialize, celebrate, talk positively about these people, how much they've entertained us, or, you know, we're fans of, and just, you know, speak positively about them for what they've done. So, for Scott Criscolo, Tim Capel, and Steve Willie, I am Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining us on the show, and we'll see you next time. Take care.